This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
We are partisan for principle, and the principle right now shows us that more and more and more Democrats are the ones looking at work.
This is the Quality News Network. President Bush announced tougher guidelines from imported products. Bush proposed that the FDA should have the authority to order mandatory recalls of unsafe food products. The president also suggested increasing the presence of U.S. inspectors to monitor the safety of imported goods. By a vote of 11-8, the Senate Judiciary Committee gave retired Judge Michael Mukasey the okay as the next Attorney General. The full Democratic-led Senate will now vote on Mukasey's nomination. That vote could come at the end of this week. 2007 is the deadliest year for U.S. troops in Iraq. Today, the U.S. military announced the deaths of 5 soldiers and 1 sailor, bringing the yearly death toll to at least 853. Also today, Iraqi troops discovered 22 bodies in a mass grave. 2 rallies by Pakistani lawyers turned violent today when they protested President General Pervez Musharraf's emergency rule. Pakistan's deposed Chief Justice called on lawyers to continue protesting. Saturday, Musharraf ousted judges, lawyers, censored the media, and ordered authorities to crush dissent. A bomb attack aimed at a group of lawmakers in Afghanistan killed 40 people. The blast killed children, elders, and government officials. 81 people were wounded. Today, throughout the U.S., is Election Day. Voters go to the polls primarily to elect local officials and decide local and statewide propositions. Tens of thousands of hungry and sick storm victims are awaiting aid in Mexico, where severe flooding has caused mudslides. 16 people are missing in southern Mexico. In Tabasco, 80% of the land is underwater, and hundreds are waiting on rooftops to be rescued. President Bush pledged $300,000 in emergency assistance to Tabasco and Chiapas. North Korea is working with U.S. experts to disable its nuclear weapons-making facilities. According to Sung Kim from the State Department, disablement is underway at 3 major facilities at the main nuclear complex north of Pyongyang. North Korea shut down its reactor in July and promised to disable it by year's end. The California National Guard announced a 36-member military police company is under investigation for allegedly stealing donations meant for victims of recent Southern California fires. You're listening to QNN, Science and Business, next.
For an insider's look at quality news coverage, be sure to read 2 of the latest books by award-winning journalist and author Tony Seaton. The Quality Interview and Don't Mess with the Press transport the reader into the world of journalism, including the ups and downs of network news coverage and what it's really like reporting the important events we see happening every day around the world. Don't Mess with the Press is an intriguing and engaging chronicle of Tony's early career, beginning with his start as a copy boy for ABC News back in the 1970s to working his way up to become producer of network news interviews for Barbara Walters. The Quality Interview is the definitive guide to the art of the interview. Learn interviewing basics and much more, including how to get crucial information out of even the toughest interview. For more on Don't Mess with the Press and The Quality Interview by Tony Seaton, visit our website at www.qualitynewsnetwork.com.
Scientists have identified an intelligence-boosting gene in newborn babies. The discovery explains why breastfeeding can raise a child's IQ. Research shows that long-chain polyunsaturated fatty acids, or PUFAs, are present in breast milk but not in cow's milk. Taking birth control pills could lead to heart disease even for women who quit taking them. New research from scientists in Belgium shows an increase of artery-clogging plaque in key blood vessels in the heart and legs. The study involved women 25 to 55 years old who used birth control pills for 13 years or more. Wall Street bounced back at the close today as ExxonMobil pushed the Dow Industrials higher with oil prices rising. The tech sector saw positive numbers while shares of the electronic commerce company Alibaba.com almost tripled in its Hong Kong debut. Crude oil prices jumped up 3% to a new all-time high today of $97 a barrel. The Department of Energy will release a report on energy supplies tomorrow. And light sweet crude oil is trading up $2.72 at $96.70 a barrel. Gold was up $13 at $824 an ounce. On Wall Street, the Dow Jones was up 117 points, the NASDAQ was up 30 points, and the S&P 500 unchanged. There's more on our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com.
Okay! Tokyo,
South America.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And a very good Monday evening to you all. Oh, wait, sorry. My bad. Tuesday. Tuesday, Bob. They're all kind of running together for me. We weren't here last night, any of the programs, because of some technical difficulties involving the single most incompetent technology corporation in America. That would, of course, be the fine folks at Verizon, who sent some voltage down our T1 line and fried the great big humongous Adtran unit that hangs on the wall here. Good things and bad things, you know, it was a mixed bag. On the one hand, it fried CityNet's unit, so they had to send a technician come running here to get us back up. That took him a couple of hours. And but it didn't, it blessed that little thing's heart, it didn't get past it, it didn't fry our phone unit. Yes, atta way to go, CityNet. You guys are great. And I'm proud to be associated with you. I'm proud that the horn's associated with you. I'm proud that you're a West Virginia company, showing the great big inept, the behemoth like Verizon how it ought to be done. Mighty proud, mighty proud. So we weren't here last night, and for that I apologize because I had planned on more on Monday. So we'll probably have to carry that over to Tuesday Twits. After we get done with the upcoming continuation of the debate from Mark's program. And, you know, I listened to the very practical, real politic things that our good friend Mark Levine had to say about this this impeachment resolution that was introduced by Dennis Kucinich today. And I understand it. I comprehend it. I get it. I do get it. But as I have mentioned in the past, bless my soul, maybe stuff that I was supposed to have forgotten somewhere along the way stuck instead. You know, when it comes around to the 4th of July every year, I've told you that I'm a real geek, and I print out the Declaration of Independence, and whether there's nobody there or the kids or me or just, you know, the cat and the beagle, I stand there on the front porch and I read the Declaration of Independence just as it was read on porches and general storefronts and public houses and courthouses all across what were then the 13 colonies on July 4th, 1776. And it's kind of like Christmas that way. You know, when Christmas comes around, we say, you know, oh, if only it could be Christmas every day of the year and we could have that spirit of giving and wonderfulness and kindness toward our fellow man. It's the same thing with the 4th of July. The 4th of July, the Declaration of Independence isn't just for the 4th of July anymore. This language is becoming more and more and more important and relevant. Listen for a moment. when in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bonds which have connected them with another and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinion of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impelled them to the separation. Well, we're trying to, we understand, us liberals, us progressives, non-blue dog Democrats, you know, decent people, we understand how critical it is that we separate ourselves from Dick Cheney and George Bush, lest we go down with them when the worst happens. So that's the first paragraph, and it's a fairly short document. The last paragraph, however, is a grabber. And that is just a simple statement. And for the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. Our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. Is there, beyond a mere handful in the House of Representatives right now, is there anyone who would be willing to take that pledge? Our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. Our fortunes? Our fortunes? You mean my re-election war chest with all that PAC money from the insurance industry and the pharmaceutical industry and the banking industry and the oil industry and the war profiteering industry? Oh, I can't pledge that. There's too much money in that. And seeing how I've got all of that and what I had to do to get it, it's pretty much a foregone conclusion that I don't have any confounded sacred honor to deal with. No, it wants me some political power. Wants me a bunch of political power. So I'm going to ignore that pesky Constitution, and I'm going to ignore the idealism in which this nation was born, and the liberal principles attendant thereupon, and I'm going to pretend that Dennis Kucinich didn't just introduce a privileged resolution of impeachment against Richard B. Dick Cheney. Nope, just another day at the office. Move along, move along. Nothing here to see. These are not the droids you're looking for. Move along. Isn't there a proposal to build the mushroom-growing business in a cave somewhere in western Pennsylvania that I can vote on here? Not something nice and safe? Jesus. So that's where we find ourselves. We find ourselves with a Democratic majority in the House of Representatives that lacks the basic courage to act on principle. And we get what we got today. On the other hand, when no one else is willing to talk about it, somebody somebody wants to get the discussion started, by God, look to a leader. Look to Dennis Kucinich, because he got the discussion started. Now, the next question is, on the mainstream media, will the story be tonight or tomorrow morning or whatever, Dennis Kucinich introduces resolution of impeachment against Richard B. Dick Cheney, or will it be, oh my God, did you know Dennis Kucinich's wife has a tongue piercing just like Britney Spears? You pick. Which is it going to be? Mark?
The UFO, Bob.
Well, yeah. But you pick. Is it going to be UFOs and tongue piercings, or will we actually talk about the reason why this might have been introduced?
The former.
UFOs and tongue piercings.
Yes.
You know, when Tim Russert brought up that UFO thing the other night, it still bugs me. The way he asked the question, did you really see a UFO? Why didn't he ask the question, did you really see a UFO like Ronald Reagan said he saw twice? Why not ask it that way?
That would have been better.
It would have been honest. If Dennis Kucinich were elected tomorrow, he would become the third president of the United States to claim he has seen a UFO.
Oh, I don't know who the other one was.
Carter.
Was it? Oh, great.
Well, he saw a UFO and an attack bunny, but we'll forget about that.
All of us see things in the sky that we're not sure what they are. You know, is that a star? Is that Venus? Is that an airplane?
By definition, it is a UFO.
Is that a cloud?
Yeah.
Well, it's an unidentified flying object.
It's flying. You don't know what it is, and it's a thing. UFO.
But he could. But Kucinich could have said that. He could have said, "I thought I saw something in the sky." Instead, he went in and did himself no favors by pretending, you know, by being wacko, which is a problem when our agenda supporting the Constitution is put forward by people who. I mean, I remember Governor Moonbeam, right? Jerry Brown had some of these other weird things. And Jerry Brown is a good progressive and, you know, support a lot of things that I support, but also had some wacko problems that made, unfortunately, his good progressive ideas not be taken seriously. I fear that's true of Kucinich as well. And now I'm the whole Horn audience is going to be mad at me.
Well, no,
I call it as I see it.
But you know, you mentioned in the during your show, Mark, the absence of legitimate media coverage.
Right.
Well, and I typed this to you in our production chat. That may be coming to an end, or at least other people are trying to start the dialogue. Dennis tried to start it today, from the floor of the House, leading by example. On the other hand, last night in his special comment, Keith Olbermann was using the phrase George Bush and prison in the same sentence.
I love Keith Olbermann.
Oh, I want to have
him. I want to be Keith Olbermann. I want his job. I mean, not that I don't want him. I want him to have the job, and I want a similar job.
I just
want
to have his babies. I mean, you know. No, he's tremendous, and he's measured, and he is ferocious when he wants to be. But, yeah, I mean, and he's got pretty significant ratings. I mean, he doesn't have he doesn't have NBC nightly news ratings, but he's beginning that discussion, and we're beginning that discussion. No, we're not reaching nearly the people he is, but the actions that we each individually take. Dennis Kucinich opened a door for a lot of Americans today, and that door is to contact, well, she doesn't want to be contacted unless you dummy up a zip code. She won't even take your email. But to try to put pressure, bring pressure to bear on Nancy Capitolosi.
You have to understand this. Nancy Pelosi is elected by the Democrats in Congress, okay?
Mm-hmm.
If you want to put pressure on Nancy Pelosi, don't call her. Call your member of Congress if they're a Democrat. Because I honestly think that she is not, that she is, this is not her thing. She is representing the people that she stands for. Look, in the first tabling resolution, the majority of Democrats, I've been doing some punching some numbers here while you've been talking, supported it. We have about 130 Democrats supported it, and about 90 did not. So the majority of Democrats were willing to debate the issue of impeachment and probably would have voted for it. But even if it's the majority of Democrats, it's about 60% of Democrats, which is about 30% of the House, which means it would have gone down 70-30 and been this tremendous Republican victory. At least the Republicans agreed that it would make them be a victory, which is why they joined the Democrats in the first resolution on this, to bring it to the floor. Remember, it won. Then they had a second one. This was the one done by Hoyer to send it to John Conyers, and that was a way to make the Democrats avoid what they felt would be their party split in half and at the same time look like they're doing something. They're sending it to John Conyers. So it's a very interesting thing. The idea is that they need the votes to do things that you and I agree with, and therefore why split and raise anger and cause, you know, hard feelings on a symbol.
But you keep, and that's the, I guess I take issue with you there, Mark. You keep calling it a symbol. Maybe it was symbolic when they impeached Bill Clinton over a stained blue dress. It certainly wasn't substantive. But they took it all the way to an attempt to remove that man from office and disenfranchise you and me both.
And for 4 months, that's all that the whole government and American people could talk about. I mean, here we were attacked during that month. People talk about, why didn't Clinton do anything when the embassies were bombed? Actually, he did. He actually went and bombed Afghanistan. And they said, oh, he's just trying to take wag the dog. It's exactly what they said. So, basically, Pelosi and the majority of Democrats have made the political calculation that they can get more accomplished, The reason it's symbolic is simply because they think they're going to lose. I have no doubt if the Democrats thought they could win this thing, there'd be a lot more support for it. They're counting noses.
I understand that. I have a very fundamental, ideological, moral, philosophical disagreement with that, with nose counting as the most basic unit of political calculation. This is a country that exists right now, Mark, in a time in which we are in desperate need of greatness, and we are calling out and crying across the land, and no one seems willing to answer the call. And the thing is, I'm not just talking about somebody running for president. I'm talking about anybody wanting to stand up and lead, as opposed to wait and see whether the people who think that Britney Spears is a relevant news item decide to get off their intellectual asses and give a damn about this country. And I don't think you disagree with me on that.
I would vote for impeachment.
I would too.
I understand what happened today.
Oh, I do too. I do too.
I'm not saying you don't understand it, Bob. It's political calculation. It's exactly what it is. It's a question of, do you think that a vote on impeachment that will lose but bring up the question is more important to your constituents than children's health care?
Well, we didn't get that either.
No, we didn't. But I don't think they're giving up on that. I really don't. I think they're going to keep passing that. And they already passed the second one. They're going to keep passing it again and again. And the Democrats feel, and I think they're right, that the middle 20% of America, that's not the 40% Democrats or the 40% Republicans, the middle 20% will vote for Democrats because of children's health care. But they will not vote for Democrats if they're seen as the party of payback and impeachment.
You've read the Federalist Papers, you've read the
yes.
the words of the founders, and how profoundly they felt about the impeachment clause in the Constitution and what purpose it served. What does it say for our future if we continue to consolidate power into the hands of a president who can do anything he wants? That's what bothers me most about this. I'm not interested in payback or gotcha. I mean, if George Bush had come into office and just been the typical loathsome, the godless, motherless, soulless Republican, I'd say, boy, I tell you what, I can't wait till this is over. We get somebody decent in there. But that's not what this is. We are talking about the open, flagrant, malicious, willful, wanton violation of the Constitution, of federal statutes, whether it's habeas corpus, domestic spying, torture.
But see, Bob, we need the smoking gun. And the smoking gun is being shrouded in executive privilege. I have no doubt that it's there. But that's why I... And,
what about
and,
the Downing Street
minutes? The problem is they're going to run out the clock. They're stalling, they held the ball, and the game's over in a year. Okay? And frankly, in 6 months already, probably less, people will be so focused on the presidential election that they won't care what this government does. So the clock is running out.
And so the onus comes...
When we declare them in contempt, because the administration refuses to follow that law, it'll probably go to the Supreme Court, and there won't even be a ruling till after this administration is gone. So the point is, the smoking gun, we won't be able to discover, because this president's very good at running out the clock. We will discover the smoking gun 5 years later, 10 years later, maybe 2 years later if we're lucky, and then we'll say, see, they were breaking the law. And America will yawn, just like they yawned when we found out that actually Gore did win the election in 2000. No surprise to me. It'll be old news. I don't like it.
Scares me, though, is as far as our future is concerned, what happens now has tremendous impact on what happens down the road. I mean, because one of the things we say, and I think we've talked about this on the air before, Mark,
yeah,
is that we sit here and we look at George Bush and we go, wow, it could not possibly get any worse.
No, you're right. It's the most lawless president we've ever had.
But the thing is, there is a monster down the road. Maybe he or she is in the crib as we speak, who will make George Bush look like an absolute choir boy.
No, you're right.
And if the Congress does not and these are the kind I would give anything to have one of these high thin atmosphere breathing powerful congressional people listening to this discussion, because I don't think they ever talk or think this way, Mark. They don't think about the future. They think about the immediate needs of their political agenda, which
right.
is intimately tied with their own
because
political
they believe,
power.
Because they believe that the American people, and they may be right, are not focused on these rarefied niceties like the importance of our democracy and constitution and survival as a republic, which I happen to think are quite important, and are much more focused on get that subsidy bill out. So,
yeah, well, I saw in the chat room, even as we speak, they're voting to override Bush's veto of the water bill.
Yeah, which is like,
and they're going to jam that. They're going to jam that sideways down his throat.
Which is the wrong one to jam sideways down his throat.
Yeah, it's
frankly,
not
I got to tell you that one of the first vetoes I've ever seen George Bush, I'm sure the only veto that he's ever done that I support, is his veto of the farm bill. I support his veto. I'm going to praise Bush. I think it's a bunch of subsidies to huge agri-corporations that don't need our money anymore. And even though there is some good stuff in the bill, we may talk about this tomorrow a little bit, I'm tired of paying farmers not to grow crops.
Or paying Archer Daniels Midland to grow number two field corn.
Exactly.
I don't care how long you boil it, you can't eat it.
If you earned under $50,000 a year or something, then fine. But that's not where the money's going. So the problem is, part of it has to do with what you call your member of Congress about. And that's why I'm trying to encourage people. If you support what Kucinich did today, if you support impeachment being on the table, you can get mad at Nancy Pelosi all you want. You can't vote for her. Call your member of Congress. Call them up. Call her up. Send them an email. But actually, the phone call is probably more effective. In fact, a letter is even more effective. Go visit them. Ask them what their views are. Ask them why they're not doing anything. If the majority of the Democratic caucus wants this done, Pelosi and Hoyer will follow them, no question about it. Call your member of Congress. Now, you know, is Mollahan your member of Congress?
No, mine's Ray Hall.
Yeah,
he distinguished himself today. You know, waiting for the little cattle prod from Nancy, seeing which way to vote.
Yeah. Well, you know.
And, you know, I've written to him 3, 4, 5 times saying, you know, dadgummit, it's time to separate the goats from the sheep.
We need more power for the horn. That's why we need more Keith Olbermans in the world. People like you and me on talking to a wider audience. That's the problem. That's why I left politics and I'm on the radio, Bob. I was in that, right? I was in the middle of all that. I knew exactly how the House Judiciary Committee worked. I was there. And, of course, we were the minority at the time. And I said, well, no, I need to talk about this. I need to get the American people, because what I learned there was they do listen when the American people get riled up. And how the American people get riled up today? Talk radio. Rush Limbaugh riles them up. He tells them lies. And the ditto heads believe it.
And that's all. And liberal or conservative or whatever, you turn on the radio and that's all they can hear. That's what they think
is
riling America up.
That's right, because the right wing controls that media. And that's why long before Air America, long before the horn, sorry, Bob, I was out there, you know, in 2003 saying, hey, they're lying to us about the war. At a time when Bush had a 70-80% approval rating and people thought I was crazy and thought I was the radical leftist. Now, you know, I'm the moderate in the group.
I know. I remember, what was it, July? Was it July 2003? Oh, my God, these are like the conversation on the front porch of the nursing home now, Mark. July of 2003, the treason gate story broke very quietly. And I was on the air saying, pardon me, this is an impeachable offense.
Exactly.
This is a treasonous offense. And I remember the right wing ringers calling, that's just because you hate George W. Bush.
That's right. And that's what they say. That's exactly what they say. And that's what they will say, and that's what they will always say. So the question is not how we can appease them, but how do we get, ironically, the people who choose and decide elections in America are that middle 20%. That's what's so weird. The people who care least about politics the people who are trying to do their jobs and raise their kids and got important things to do, take care of their sick relatives, they're the ones who decide elections. And they don't hear too much the horn. I wish they did. They're mostly listening with one ear on the kid and another ear on the dinner and maybe a third ear, if they're lucky, on the NBC Evening News or, unfortunately, on Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, God. It's so frustrating because, you know, we are trying to make that change. And there are individual activist-oriented people. Most of the people who listen to these programs, Mark, are people who are willing to stand on street corners with signs, who are willing to handbill, who are willing to talk to people in the line at the grocery store or across the pump at the gas station or at the post office. And they do. I think the groundswell. I might have a little bit more optimistic view of this than you do. I think the groundswell is there. It is just being conscientiously ignored. It's something that we don't want. You know, this is like saying poopy at the dinner table. It's just not done because it would actually mean for the journalist class, Mark, it would mean that they actually had to work. And for the political class, it would mean that they actually had to stand for something. And for those 20%ers you're talking about, it means that they hear a little bit more about politics and a little bit less about Britney Spears. So I guess there's a perfect storm of stuff that diverts us from actually doing the business of the Constitution of the United States. Does that make any sense? Mark, did I lose you? Oh, for pity's sakes. Well, no, we're still cooking. I must have lost Mark somewhere along the way. But that's what it is, isn't it? It's a perfect storm of why we can't get the people's business done. I promise I didn't hang up on Mark. That I'm aware of. No, he's still connected. Mark, are you there? Nope. Well, I've got a couple of blinking lights here. Okay, you're a busy signal. You're not.
Hi there.
Hey, how are you? What's going on, Susan?
Well, got a couple things to say. One was about Mark. He mentioned something about... Dennis' answer about the UFO and him coming across as a wacko. To me, he came across as being honest.
Well, yeah, I mean, what's he going to do, lie about it?
Yeah.
Or if he dances around it, he's going to, oh, well, you know, he just wants us to think he's not crazy.
Yeah. Here's something you might not know. There are very, very strict rules for pilots, you know. The least little thing off as far as physical condition, and they will ground them for very obvious reasons. You don't want commercial pilots crashing a plane full of people. That tends to make civilians get very nervous.
Yeah.
In all of the times since 1949, when you had commercial aircraft and military aircraft, and astronauts sighting UFOs, not one of those people has ever been grounded. Now, if they're crazy, they certainly shouldn't be flying supersonic jets, some of them loaded with nuclear missiles. You would think, wouldn't you? But not one has ever been grounded.
And you know the rational answer is what Mark gave. If you see it, it's flying, and you don't know what it is. It's a UFO.
Yeah.
I mean,
and there are, you know, most of the things are perfectly explainable, utterly explainable. There's about 1% that even the government, if you press them, will admit
I think we got Mark back. Hey, you there, Mark?
You did. Major computer problems.
If I'm a
conspiracy theorist, I'd say they wanted to shut me up, but I'm not. It was my computer.
Yeah, it was Agent Fred. That's P-H-R-E-D, Fred. Yes.
I understand.
Oh, and I wanted to know if anybody caught, by the way, before I mention this, when I call my representative, which I do often enough to the point where they know my voice, they just say, oh, hi, Susan.
Good.
I don't even have to give my name. One of my constant complaints, besides the various and sundry things like I want 333 and so on and so forth, is I want my Constitution back.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff in there.
Yeah, I want the Constitution back. I don't want some purity rig or some.
Yeah. Mark, you were saying?
I was going to say, unfortunately, with the way the courts are, and with the young conservatives like Alito and Roberts, it's going to take a long time to get our Constitution back, which is why at some point people are saying, let's just get Democrats in office. Let's get a Democratic president in 08 so that we can start undoing this damage. I mean, John Paul Stevens, bless his 87-year-old heroic soul, can't live that much longer. I think he can survive through January 09, but I don't think he can survive much longer. And God help this nation if he dies in the next year.
Yeah, because our Democrats in the our Senate Democrats don't have the nerve, as they showed with Leslie Southwick, Mark, to stand up and say, we're sorry, George, you just don't get to appoint any more judges. You've had enough.
Yeah. Stick a fork in us. Yeah.
And the reason that they're not, Bob, again, it goes back to that word you hate, politics, and nose counting, mm-hmm. because they think that if they stick it to Bush now, that the Republicans will stick it to Hillary or whoever our next Democratic president will be. The sad thing is,
they're going to do that anyway.
And they still stick it to us.
Yeah, they're going to nail her anyway. It doesn't matter how.
Yeah, but Mark, you do point out the importance of put it this way. Would Dennis Kucinich appoint better Supreme Court justices than Giuliani or McCain or Romney or any of the other freaks? Absolutely. How about
and so would Hillary Clinton?
How about you can work all the way through the continuum. Any Democrat would appoint better Supreme Court justices. So
than any Republican.
And so if you're weighing that, if you're engaged in that political calculus of it seems to me like the dichotomy that I'm seeing right now is the people who like Barack Obama just despise Hillary. I mean, they go to bed hating her. And it goes the same way for the Hillary people versus Barack and everybody else.
I don't see it that way at all.
No,
I really don't.
Oh, gosh.
I don't know who you're talking to. I mean, I still haven't decided yet who I'm going to vote for. I'm leaning right now toward Obama, but I don't hate Hillary. I don't hate Hillary at all. I she's not perfect. I got some problems with her. But I think Barack Obama has been very careful not to do what John Edwards is doing, which is some really all-out attacks. I think he's being judicious in spelling out the differences without, you know, I mean, Edwards is attacking pretty hard. And I actually think, who knows, Obama could be her Veep nominee. I don't see this hard blood between the two of them. I don't.
But
do you?
Yeah, I do. I mean, the places
really?
I go and the stuff I see, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, the supporters, you know, supporters can say and do whatever they want. But I don't think between those two senators.
Oh, no, no, no. Between the not between the individuals, but like I said, between the people who are for them. I see stuff like because of the message boards I go around and read and hang out on, things like that. I see things like, well, you know, if Hillary's the nominee, I'm going to stay home.
Well,
or
that's a really stupid thing to say.
It is dumber than a bag of rags. And I see, you know, and the people who say, you know, I'll vote for a third party candidate, whatever.
Why not just vote for Dick Cheney? If you're going to vote for a third-party candidate, heck, just vote for Cheney.
Oh, no, 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 no.
At least you're being honest in what you're actually doing.
No, see, you don't understand, Mark. The people who talk that kind of crap say things like, well, I have a right to vote my conscience.
Oh, you have a right to be stupid. Yeah, you have a God-given constitutional American right to be stupid. That's right. I agree.
And so
I'm not going to take away your right to be stupid.
But for me, Mark, Susan, when it comes right down to it, the Supreme Court is the one reason to go out and support whoever is the Democratic nominee. Because, you know, I got news for people. There ain't going to be a green president. There's not going to be a Socialist Workers' Party president.
Not in the next 50 years.
No, there's going to be. There's
maybe in the next 100.
Yeah, there's going to be a Democratic president or there's going to be a Republican president.
Yeah,
and here's the thing.
Susan?
Go ahead.
I don't like either Hillary, I should say, Senator Clinton, or Obama's politics. But if either one is the nominee, I'm holding my nose and I'm voting for him.
Yeah.
For specifically that reason.
Here's the thing. You said at the beginning when I got back from my computer meltdown, Susan, that you wanted your Constitution back. And the unfortunate thing and the reason why we're having so much trouble impeaching Dick Cheney or anything else is because when we have contempt charges and so forth, when there are conflicts between Congress and the executive, it's the Supreme Court who is the mediator in those conflicts. And we have a far, far right-wing Supreme Court. And if we have four more years of Republican president, then I fear for this country. I mean,
yeah, because it's over for 30 years or so, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they're all young. They're all young. Every one of them, the right-wingers, is young. Rehnquist was the only old one, and O'Connor, and they're gone now.
Well, Scalia's in his 70s.
Well, yeah, but Scalia, okay. He's old. He's older, too.
But the thing is, being in your 70s on the Supreme Court is young now. See, that's the thing.
Well,
so is Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
The Democrats.
Yeah, Ruth Bader Ginsburg's in her 70s. John Paul Stevens, a Republican appointee, by the way.
Yeah, Gerald Ford appointed him.
Yeah, is 87. So, you know, George has gotten his shot, and if he gets even one more, we're in bad trouble. Now, what I'd like to see happen is if there's a Democratic president, I would very much like to see some Supreme Court. I'm sure Justice Stevens would like to retire.
He'll retire the moment a Democrat takes power. I mean, it doesn't matter. He can retire any time in those 4 years.
Yeah, because
when you're 87 years old, you tend to want to rest.
He's lashed to the mast right now.
Oh my God, yes. He is fighting for his life, but God grant John Paul Stevens long life. He's a wonderful man.
And so, you know, I'd like to see if we get a Democratic president, I'd like to see a couple of, two or three of the oldsters go.
Well, they will. They will. They've been holding out a long time.
Holding out, just praying for a Democratic president and a Democratic Congress.
I was in Yale Law School. I graduated in 1992. I know I don't look that old. But I remember very clearly George H.W. Bush's presidency, and I remember Justice Thurgood Marshall, who was getting up in age and hadn't always lived the most healthy life, though, he definitely led the moral life. He's one of my huge heroes. But we had something called the Yale Law Review, R-E-V-U-E, which was a send-off of the various, sort of our parody, musical parody thing.
Yeah, a hasty pudding club for law.
Exactly. And my favorite song that I still remember was "Hang On, Thurgood, Hang On." And we each had, our hands, pretending to be on a bench and a head just rising above a bench because his health was not good in 1991, 1992. And he almost made it. He almost made it. I mean, honestly, at the end, his clerks were writing all his opinions.
Yeah.
But and then the fact that he was replaced by Clarence Thomas, one of my heroes, with one of the big idiot ideologue wackos, is one of the most shameful things that's ever happened in America.
I'm praying for divine intervention on that one.
So I'm saying, hang on, John Paul, hang on. He seems to be in good health. He seems to be a very spry 87 years old.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and make the official Ann Coulter statement. Hang on, John Paul, hang on. Car wreck, Scalia, car wreck.
That is the end culture statement.
Did any of you catch the racial slur Bush came out with?
No.
No, I've got another racial slur for tonight, but not that one.
Oh, yeah, you're going to love it.
Tell us, Susan.
Over the weekend, when Musharraf was doing his thing with his country's constitution, and Bush was coming out and saying, we want you to go back to democratic reforms and all this stuff, and I was sitting there laughing, I almost fell off the chair because somebody asked Bush a question, and then he said he was going to have to get back to the PACs on that.
Oh, the get back to the Packies. That's what he calls them, the Packies.
That's like calling an Italian a spick.
Wait. He calls them the Packies?
Yeah. I have to get back to the Packies on that one.
The Pakistanis?
Yeah, we're lucky he doesn't call them the Pakistankos.
Oh, that's not good. I began my broadcast attacking Pakistan, but that, that's not good.
It's not good. It's par for the.
I'm sorry, that's not good.
Par for the confounded course.
Media. Oh my God.
Yeah, the Pakis.
You know, and we wonder why Turkey and the Kurds, two of our great allies, by the way, are about to get into a war with each other. You know, we have to look. I have my own solution on that, which I've talked about many times. But the point is that we seem to be involved in all the world places where we shouldn't be, and none of the world places where we should be.
See, I just every time the Kurdish issue crops up, Mark, I cringe every time George Bush talks about it because I know he's going to have a slip of the tongue one of these days.
Don't go there, Bob.
And you know what he's going to call them.
Don't go there, Bob.
But especially if he's, because, I mean, you're a radio guy, Mark, you know. You're talking about the Turks and the Kurds and the Kurds and the Turks, and pretty soon it's the Kirks and the Turds.
Bob, I knew you'd go there.
How can I not? It's internet radio.
I tried to stop it.
It's internet radio, man. We don't have to be afraid of the FCC. We're free. No buggy whips here. But do you disagree?
One more year and two more months. You know, I voted today.
I don't know if my
I voted in the great state of Virginia. I can't wait to see how these results turn out. I think we're going to gain back one of our two houses here in this state.
This was your election day. That's right.
Great state.
That's right.
Of Oregon.
So one more year and we'll be election day November 2008. And it can't come soon enough.
I mailed quite a while ago.
So, yeah, this was election day for you guys, too, wasn't it, Susan?
Yeah,
in New Jersey, right?
No, Oregon.
Oregon. Yeah. Oh, in Oregon, too. I knew Virginia and New Jersey. So I guess they're more than just those two states with the off-off year. Well, who did you vote? I mean, was there just assembly races in Oregon, or did you vote for the governor? What was it, Susan?
No, not the governor. It was just some local things and initiatives.
Was it statewide?
Oh, yeah, it was statewide.
Well, I mean, the state legislature, the Oregon legislature, it wasn't...
the legislature comes up when the... during the...
The even number years. I think... that's what I thought. Virginia and New Jersey, I think, are the only two states that hold their major assembly legislative races in the off-off years. Mm-hmm. We vote all the time here, every few months.
Oh, we're voting.
But it's a very important election because we need to re-gerrymander the state back. It's Virginia is a red state becoming blue, folks. We have a Democratic governor, and it's all because of Northern Virginia basically becoming bigger and more powerful and more populous than the rest of Virginia. We have a little civil war in Virginia between what we call Nova and Rova, Northern Virginia and rest of Virginia.
Oh, is that what it is? I thought maybe it was rural Virginia. No, rest of. That's
no. It's meant as pejoratively as it sounds. Nova and Rova.
Flyover Virginia.
Exactly. And so there's a big fight, and Virginia is, like I said, we voted for Jim Webb. We're going to, in fact, elect a new Democratic senator. We're going to have two Democratic senators. There's no question Mark Warner is going to win in 08. We will have two Democratic senators and a Democratic governor. And I think we're going to get a Democratic Senate in these elections. It's going to be very close. If we can get a Democratic Assembly, too, we can re-gerrymander the state back. Right now we have, out of 11 representatives, 8 are Republican because they drew the lines that way. If we can get a Democratic governor assembly, we could get 6 Democrats and actually, you know, gain, let's see, what is that, 4 more seats or so in the House, too. So this election, it seems like a minor one, but it's actually really crucial toward the national races. Mm-hmm. And I happily voted for my Democratic representative here, who I'm a big supporter of.
As a recovering Baptist, we're the ones to remember the line in the Bible about those who sow
the wind will reap the whirlwind?
Yeah. And I get the feeling that the Republicans are sowing the whirlwind and they're about to reap what they've sown.
And you're right, Susan, and this goes back, Mark, to the origin of the discussion. Which do we want more, to get rid of a warmongering, war criminal, Constitution-violating president? Or do we want to consolidate power in the Democratic Party's hands and sort of hope against hope that they'll actually do what we want them to do? Because that's the Hobson's choice that we're being presented right now. Can't have both. You can only have one.
That's your definition of the choice. I think we can have both.
Well, I do too, but it seems like, I mean, the House is pretty clear that, you know, I mean, that's the way you describe it. You know, well, if we try to impeach him, you know, they're liable to say mean things about us. They're going to say mean things anyway. They're Republicans.
Oh, yeah.
They're mean.
It doesn't matter what's going to happen. They're going to say mean things anyway, so why not have fun while we're at it? Let's impeach the sucker.
The language.
Look, Mr. Turd Kirk.
Big, I don't know. There's a list here. I'm sorry. It's like I got Agnes over my shoulder.
I'm going to head on out.
Yeah, you've got
but
stuff
I
to do.
But I enjoy our discussions, and I'll actually finish what I was going to say about Pakistan, I guess, tomorrow, and talk about the one veto of George Bush's that I actually support. Boy, I am total contrarian here, aren't I?
Don't make us look at your voter registration, Mark.
You go for it. I am unafraid of you looking at my voter registration. Completely unafraid.
Well, and, we will catch you at 5 p.m.
I'll
Eastern tomorrow.
Back on what happened in Virginia tomorrow as well. So I will see you all then. Enjoyed our discussion, Bob.
I did too. Take care, Mark. Always a pleasure.
Bye, Susan.
Bye. And you seem to be coming up on the top of the hour, so I'm going to bug on out of here too.
Everybody wants to DJ for me. Oh, my God. Okie doke. Susan, good talking to you, dear. Happy Election Day.
Give Agnes a kiss for me.
Sure will. Bye now.
Okay, bye-bye.
So, have we accomplished anything? Do we just go quietly into that good night? Do we say, well, you know, that's just how it is. We're not going to get him impeached, so we might as well quit trying. And throw all our efforts behind getting a bigger majority in the House and getting a viable majority in the Senate? Is that how it works? Is it legitimately about being able to protect our judicial nominees when we do get a Democrat in the White House? That's it's a legitimate argument. So too, however, are the mandates of the Constitution of the United States. That says when you've got a president who is clearly and flagrantly violating the law, that you have to do something about him. Now, on the other hand, one of the arguments that Mark made was that when 55% of the American people say they want these bastards impeached, they will be. Well, on the floor of the House today, somebody stood up and was counted. Somebody stood for the rule of law today. That somebody was Dennis Kucinich. Will it get mentioned on the evening news? Will he get a few more interviews on the evening news or this news show or that news show, making it possible that a few more people actually consider the crimes that have been committed? You know, please understand, you're not going to convince, and Mark is correct, you're not going to convince that hardcore cancerous knot of phony Americans who believe that if they saw video of George Bush drowning children, they'd swear it was a baptism. You're not going to convince them now. You're never going to convince them. Tom Tomorrow has a great cartoon out right now, The Adventures of Conservative Jones, Boy Detective. And I'll go ahead and spoil it for you. Every time an issue comes up about, you know, why do the liberals want to do this? Why do the liberals want to do that? You know, why do they oppose him on waterboarding? Because it's torture? No, because they hate George W. Bush. And that's always the answer. Ah, you just hate George Bush. God, I heard that until I was ready to vomit. Back when I was in doing Buggy Whip Radio. And I had to actually talk to right-wingers. You know, the ones that, you know, you're denying Christ, and I feel sorry for your soul. You know, George Bush is a godly man. Oh, Lord, one of these days I'll find the tapes that this stuff is on, and what it takes to convert that over to digital audio will do when I've got, you know, a few spare days. And I'll let you guys hear what it sounds like to have to deal with a right-wing freak from southern West Virginia. And that's what it always... And it hasn't changed from 2003 to now. Poor Dr. Bill had to deal with it all the time, too. You just hate George Bush. And frankly, I can't get my mind around the reasoning for that. Because if you pinned him and you said, look, if Bill Clinton was doing this, what would you want? Well, he had sex in the Oval Office. He had to be got rid of. It's just because the Senate didn't want to follow the law. He disgraced our country. Now, the other thing, and I know Mark is a very learned individual. The other thing is a little something that I've mentioned from time to time, and it's about how you go about doing things, and that is to go and read the story of Cicero's prosecution of a man named Verus in Republican Rome of, what, 50, 60 B.C.? The rules said you had to do it thus and so, and under the rules, Cicero never would have been able to get the prosecution done because they could have just stalled for time like the Bush administration has been doing here. But he looked at the situation, turned it on its edge, turned it around upside down, viewed it from every possible angle, and then came back and completely devastated Verus by going about it in an entirely different way. That could be done here, too. There's still time to impeach George Bush and Dick Cheney. And we may yet find out more evidence for doing so. And we advance those likelihoods when Dennis Kucinich does brave things like what he did today. And when Keith Olbermann says the kind of things that he said last night. See, we're talking politics and we're talking the Republic now. In the next hour, we will examine what the right wing is talking about now. They can't talk about the manifest successes of their God and Savior, George Bush, because he doesn't have any. They can't talk about the success of the war in Iraq, because it isn't won. They can't talk about ending the war because they don't want to. So they have to talk about something else. You know, I think the next logical step is for Keith Olbermann to have Dennis Kucinich on his show and have an extended, serious, intellectual discussion about the necessity of removing these power-mad, megalomaniacal monsters from office. And then you will begin to see that groundswell of support for getting rid of these animals that are inhabiting the White House. Eh? What do you think? I do welcome your thoughts. You know the phone number. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. Or on your nickel, 304-658-5453. Doesn't spell anything that I can think of offhand. Email rolls into bob@headonradio.com. You can use that too. You can join us in the chat room, headonradionetwork.com. Registration's easy and free. This truly is conversation radio, unlike anything else happening in America today. If you're listening, you're listening to something that puts you at the forefront of actually talking about fixing what's wrong in this country. So after the news, we'll be back. This is the horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. The Senate Judiciary Committee approved the nomination of Michael Mukasey as the next U.S. Attorney General. By today's 11-8 vote, committee members passed the nomination onto the floor of the full Senate, virtually assuring Mukasey's eventual confirmation. A vote is expected by sometime next week. Pakistan's deposed Chief Justice is urging the country's lawyers to revolt against President General Musharraf's imposition of martial law. A crackdown on opposition to emergency rule has put thousands of protesters behind bars. The Chief Justice is under house arrest and reached other resistors by cell phone. Pakistani government officials are considering a delay in parliamentary elections, despite Western demands that a vote be held on time in January. In northern Afghanistan, a bomb attack struck lawmakers as they were greeted by a crowd of schoolchildren on a visit to a sugar factory. More than two dozen people were killed, including five lawmakers. Many of the dead were children. 81 people were wounded. It is being called the worst civilian bomb attack in northern Afghanistan recorded history. 2007 is the deadliest year for U.S. troops in Iraq. Today, the U.S. military announcing the deaths of five soldiers, one sailor, bringing the yearly death toll to at least 853. Also today, Iraqi troops discovered 22 bodies in a mass grave. Today, throughout the U.S., is Election Day. Voters go to the polls primarily to elect local officials and decide local and statewide propositions. President Bush announced tougher guidelines for imported items. The White House wants the FDA to have the authority to order mandatory recalls of unsafe food products. North Korea is working with U.S. experts to disable its nuclear weapons-making facilities. According to Sung Kim from the State Department, disablement is underway at three major facilities at the main nuclear complex north of Pyongyang. North Korea shut down its reactor in July and promised to disable it by year's end. Government auditors say as many as 20,000 inadmissible non-citizens were permitted to cross U.S. borders last year. Most of those were ineligible for economic rather than security reasons. The GAO blamed poor management and inattentive guards, as well as understaffing. You are listening to the Quality News Network. Science and Business News is next. But first, this message.
Remember when the name on the door said it all? In today's world, it's the website that defines a company's image. For better or worse, a company's presence on the internet is a vital factor in how it keeps existing customers and attracts new clients. Byte Technology of Monterey is a leader in a new approach to web design. Byte designs a new site based on the mission, purpose, character, and indeed the energy of their clients. Byte is particularly successful in presenting their client's name to the global internet community because they approach the design with a clear, defined process. By fully understanding the client's business, motivation, and operation, they are able to translate the company's critical values into the new website. In addition to original design, Byte works with clients to update their website to reflect changes in target markets, products and services, and the business climate. Byte Technology. See what they're about at byte-technology.com or call 831-656-9178.
Scientists have identified an intelligence-boosting gene in newborn babies. The discovery explains why breastfeeding can raise a child's IQ. Research shows that long-chain polyunsaturated fatty acids, or PUFAs, are present in breast milk, but not in cow's milk. Taking birth control pills could lead to heart disease, even for women who quit taking them. New research from scientists in Belgium shows an increase of plaque in key blood vessels in the heart and legs. The study involved women 25 to 55 years old who used birth control pills for 13 years or more. Dow Chemical and food company Dole ordered to pay more than $3 million for exposing workers to dangerous pesticides that left 6 employees infertile. The Nicaraguan workers harvested bananas during the 1970s and the 80s. Crude oil prices jumped up 3% to a new all-time high today of $97 a barrel. Department of Energy will release a report on energy supplies tomorrow. Meantime, light sweet crude trading at $96.70 on the New York Mercantile Exchange. Wall Street bouncing back at the close today as ExxonMobil pushed the Dow Industrials higher with oil prices rising. The Dow up 117 points to end at 13,661. NASDAQ up 30 points. The S&P 500 up 18. And there's always more on our website at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Yeah, in the midst of the Dennis Kucinich act of political bravery and constitutional dedication, it goes without saying that with the bit with the sweet comes the bitter. And how bitter it was to watch the likes of Charles Schumer and Dianne Feinstein slip the shiv between the ribs of the American Republic today, voting to send Mukasey's nomination to the floor of the Senate. Interesting that according to a poll released today, a majority of Americans consider waterboarding to be a form of torture. They also don't think the U.S. government should be allowed to do it. More than 66% said waterboarding is torture. 58% said, knowing that it's torture, and see, this is one of those little demographic analysis moments. In excess of 66% of people said, yeah, it's torture. Only 58% of Americans said, since it is torture, we shouldn't be doing it. There is 12% of the population of this country that just scares the snot out of me. Yeah, it's torture. It's real mean. And that's why I like for us to do it. Michael Mukasey, well, he just doesn't know if it's torture or not. Maybe he doesn't care. Judge Michael Mukasey is almost a shoo-in now, thanks to Dianne Feinstein and Charles Schumer. Almost a shoo-in to become the Attorney General of the United States, so that he can, at least in the way that the Republican Party views things, so that he can ease the transition into a Giuliani administration. God, those words come out of my mouth and the shivers just go all over me. It's like when you're in the woods and you walk through a spider web and you feel like there's a spider on you for about the next 6 hours. Giuliani administration. Jesus! Shivering. We can't seem to muster up a realization that torturing people at the behest of the President of the United States makes that president a criminal and worthy of impeachment. While people, lawyers, as Mark noted, lawyers, are marching in the streets of Pakistan demanding their constitutional rights be restored. Restored to them from a thug who simply at the utterance of a word declared the Constitution inoperable. inoperative. Who's the civilized country? I ask you. Who's civilized? How about Myanmar, formerly Burma, where peaceful, peace-loving, peace-avowing Buddhist monks have been shot, stomped, beaten, killed, imprisoned, tortured, tormented, because they yearn to, was it Emma Lazarus that wrote the poem? Yearn to breathe free those huddled masses. Huddled masses that are not welcome in the United States, by the way. Thank you very much. Just ask Tom Tancredo. And yet, we have to confront the reality that in America, there's 12% of the people who think that waterboarding is torture and that that gives us a good reason for using it. We have to confront the reality of an America where some 20% of the population is so obsessed with invisible critters that they think are Republican gods that they would wreck the entire republic in the name of religion. An America where 20% of the population that's neither Democrat nor Republican makes the final decision in choosing a president and is as likely to choose that president based not upon political positions or philosophies of government, but upon his height or her suit color or his necktie or whether or not you feel like you could sit down and have a beer with him. In other parts of the world, they march and they die. And to quote Rudyard Kipling in Gunga Din, when it comes to slaughter, you will do your work on water and you'll lick the bloomin' boots of him that's got it. And in America, we say, I sure would like to have a beer with him. Whew. Reckon you'd better have a beer with him because you can't tolerate him sober. It's a little tough to get your head around. It's a little bit, no, who am I kidding? It's a lot disturbing. Meanwhile, this email in from our good friend Billy Shears, he being the host of Night Sounds every Saturday evening and through the day Sunday, beginning Saturday evening at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Fabulous, fabulous program. I'm there every Saturday night. Because, you know, sometimes it's nice to kick back and let it all just sort of wash away from you. But Billy writes, last night on Dancing with the Stars, one of the judges, England's Len Goodman, commented on one of the dancers. He said, just because you're from Brazil doesn't make you a good Brazilian dancer, just like if you're from Texas doesn't mean you'll be a good president. Billy says, well, the audience applauded and the host, Tom Bergeron, said, Len, at least you only offended 30% of the country. That's pretty shocking. And I grew up with a kid whose mother could never get him to eat vegetables, and as a consequence would have to hide the broccoli behind a spoonful of chocolate pudding. Maybe if we can get Britney Spears to talk about impeachment, we can get America that 20% of the people who aren't Republicans and aren't Democrats and don't have the common sense that God gave a toasted crouton. Maybe we can get busy with the body politic if we can. And I'm not being a smartass. If we can get people to start working in comments like that. because that the dig, you know, on the one hand, the dig is pretty obvious from Len Goodman, but it's Tom Bergeron's comment, well, you only insulted 30% of the country, or less. That's the real snark, and it's true. George Bush, as of today, according to what I read here, has hit a new low. The latest USA Today Gallup poll says that George Bush has a 31% approval rating. Now, okay, so what? Well, it's the first time in the poll's history where 50% of the country, 50%, getting close to that 55% mark was talking about, aren't we? 50% of the country describes their feelings for George Bush as, I strongly disapprove. Which sort of hangs like a fishbone in your throat when you realize the cowardly fashion that the Democratic Congress cowers before these disgusting misanthropes. Let's go to the phones. Nah, quitter. Hey, who have I got?
Hey, Bob, it's Kevin.
Hey, Kevin, how you doing, buddy?
Fine. I'm temporarily in Washington, but I'm heading back to Brooklyn tomorrow. So
get back as quick as you can, you know?
Oh, yeah. I'm like a stamina. I need to go back to my place of birth.
Right. Yeah, but just don't do what the salmon do when they get home.
Oh, me?
Yeah.
Oh, well, hopefully I will be.
That's what I said, but when the salmon get home, they drop dead. Don't do that.
No, I don't plan on dying anytime soon. You know what the problem is that this country, for the past two or three generations, have been way too comfortable.
Oh, yeah, we are.
And this country hasn't really suffered, really, since the Civil War.
Well, some would say the Depression.
Compared to other countries, the Depression. Well, even so, if you want to go along that argument, that generation is dying out. Most of those people are in their 80s and 90s.
Sure. And, of course, the same thing goes for the generation that learned how to truly sacrifice during the Second World War.
Yeah.
You and I, and God knows... SUV driving fundamentalist mommies in their, with one kid driving their Cadillac SUV, they have no conception. They're probably three generations removed, Kevin, from a time and a place where if you blew out a tire, you just didn't go anywhere anymore because there was not another tire to be had. The generation that sacrificed in the Second World War.
Not even that. You know, I'm talking about, I don't think this country has ever really known, even in the most remote, driest parts of this country, unless you're a survivalist, know what it is to go without drinking water.
Some of us are learning. It's happening.
Okay.
It's happening a lot.
They are.
They're over in the chat room, our good friend Nanette could probably tell a lot more about it. But there are people in places in southern West Virginia whose children are urinating blood from the poisoned groundwater and the poisoned water tables that have resulted from what the coal companies are doing to this state.
Yeah. Wow. And, you know, I will be praying for them. Yeah, but the thing is, we haven't really, and, you know, we're very comfortable. You know, even me being currently somewhat unemployed, I can afford to go out and buy, you know, a bottle of cognac and a cigar.
Yeah.
At least, you know, two or three times a week. So, you know, I don't know what it is really to suffer, even though I'm kind of like, you ever seen the movie The Gladiator?
Oh, yes.
Gladiator with Russell Crowe. You know, I'm kind of like that Roman senator who knows what it is to be, who is very sensitive towards the suffering of the people, but don't know what it is to be, you know, but he's very sensitive to people suffering.
Right.
You know, I'm kind of like that. And that, I say, is a whole generation of us.
Yeah, I'd say that.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, so the thing is, like the conversation you had with Mark and I forgot the...
Susan.
Name, Susan, yeah. You know, until Americans really suffer, and, you know, we're not going to have it. And, like, even though people say they suffered during the Great Depression, I really don't think our depression was as hard as it was in, let's say, England or Germany or Italy.
Well, obviously, post-World War I, Germany was at the well over the threshold of true dire desperation. But the trick with the Great Depression in the United States, Kevin, has to do with who it affected. There are the apocryphal tales of Wall Street traders leaping from the windows.
Oh, yes.
But the real misery of it happened to folks like my grandfather, who ruined himself for the rest of his life. He had a sawmill, had a post office, had a burgeoning little store, and knowing that people would never be able to pay him back, he continued to extend credit to people so they could continue to live and to eat. And it destroyed him in more ways than one.
Yeah, well, my grandfather, you know, had to work in England, and you know, had to work in England. Because my family, as you know, I don't think you know, is from Jamaica.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, and, you know, my family was pretty middle class, always been middle class. You know, my family has owned farms and land and, you know, been pretty prosperous. And he had to go work in England to keep the family farm. And he did that well into the 60s.
Wow.
Well into the 60s.
And so, you know, and it's the combination of events as far as the Great Depression is concerned. There's the economic stuff, and then there's the ecological disaster that transpired in Middle America where the soil blew away, the so-called Dust Bowl.
Yeah.
That forced the migrations that are best characterized by things like Steinbeck's The Grapes of Wrath.
Oh, yeah, California, because that's how California got a bulk of its population, from the Dust Bowl. Yeah. But I really, you know, the Great Depression to me is still soft compared to what other countries went through, like Germany and Italy and Russia during the Great Depression.
Yeah, and frankly, to call it, it's not suffering what happened in the Second World War, Kevin. It is shared privation toward a greater good.
Oh, yeah.
Because while people may have been frustrated that they couldn't get a new pair of shoes or couldn't get a... new set of tires, they understood that there was a reason for that. But now that we have a command economy that's based upon, and I mean that in the sincerest form of the term, that's based upon the commands of the war industry and the defense contractors and the, you know, what Eisenhower called the military-industrial complex, you know, we can be told by a guy standing on the rubble of literally human beings' bodies that the best way to defend themselves is to either fly to Disney World or go shopping.
Oh, yeah. I don't know, but, you know, like I was discussing with a friend the other day, you know, how, you know, people often, you know, diss New York saying it's not family friendly. And, you know, last week this time, you know, last Wednesday on Halloween, I went to their annual Halloween parade in the village, in Greenwich Village. And there were families out there. Now, granted, this is sponsored by, which I found out by my wife, by the gay community, which I never knew. I just thought it was a parade that the city gave. And she goes, no, this is sponsored by the gay community. And I was like, really? And I said, okay, no problem. And, you know, to see how family-friendly New York is. And, you know, this is an event where all you need to do is spend, let's say for a family of four, $20 to get on the subway and get back.
I love the idea of public transportation. My kids still talk about the fun we had getting on the train in Pittsburgh and riding down to go to the ball game.
Oh yeah.
And you know what? That for a professional ball game, there's a lot to be said for living in what I call civilization. And we were able to, let's see, four kids and three adults, my wife and I and the guy we were visiting, our buddy, we're able to go into Pittsburgh and back on, you know, maybe $10, and it was $9 a seat at the ballpark.
Yeah.
That's, you're not going to get entertainment like that for much less just about anywhere.
Yeah. You know, in Florida, you know, where I used to live and where I'm still kind of recovering from, you know, try spending the world in, you know, a day in Disney with the whole family. That's going to cost you at least $1,000.
Oh.
Easy.
Yeah, what? Well, yeah, gold-plated mouse ears, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
So, believe you me, I mean, given the size of our tribe now, Agnes and me, Lorelai and her husband, our other three kids, the baby, there's just not a lot we can do for under 100 bones.
Oh yeah. And the thing is, I tell you one thing, in Central Florida, and Phil, our friend Phil, who's from
Daytona Beach, yeah.
Yeah. He can tell you all roads lead to Disney. Somehow, some way. Whatever you call it, all roads lead to Disney.
Or Universal, or, yeah.
Yeah. Where you're going to spend $1,000 easy if for a family of, say, four or five or six.
Oh, it's tough. I mean, I guess we knew what we were getting into when we decided to have a big family.
Yeah.
But for average people out there, you know, once you get done with the car payment or car payments, the house payment, the insurance for the homeowners, the auto insurance, the credit card payments, I don't care how middle class you think you are, There's gonna be some Saturday afternoons with a pot of beans.
Oh yeah, and you know, I think you know, really the biggest threat to our country are the, again, and I think I said this before, is these middle management suburbanites who think they are wealthy, who under the delusion that they are wealthy.
Or at least living that way, sure.
Yeah, because real rich people do not live in the suburbs. They either live in the city, or they live in compounds where they own acres.
Or on tops of mountains.
Yeah. Okay. So it's these suburbanites who think, you know, and these are the six-figure people and low seven-figure people who think they are, you know, who think they're wealthy. You know, the people that you see on A&E, you know, the housewives of Orange County and all this nonsense. You know, those are the biggest threat to our country and to our economy and to our civilization.
In many ways, because you're pointing toward complacency and ignorance.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, I love where I live. I love where we live. There's a lot of frustration because, Kevin, this could be so much more, but, again, this is no different than anywhere else in America. Two or three people are interested in making things better, and the rest of them say, well, you know, it's always been this way.
Yeah.
And so, therefore, it's just going to continue to suck. There's very little here for kids. So, on the one hand, you may have a city-dwelling mom and dad worrying about crime on the streets and stuff like that, but, you know, and little Johnny falling in with the wrong crowd. Trust me, the wrong crowd lives up a holler in rural West Virginia, too.
Well, you know, like I often said, you know, to my wife, who really doesn't understand me, you know, to a certain degree, yeah, I had, to a certain degree, a great childhood and probably more like Mr. Rogers' neighborhood for someone that grew up, let's say, eight blocks away from, you know, Biggie Small. you know, I have a neighbor right now who hosts Halloween parties for the kids, and my block is so child-centered. And, you know, that can change around the corner.
Sure.
In any, in especially in New York, you know, class, race, everything changes. You got to go by block. You can't go by counties or neighborhoods or whatever. You got to go by block. You know. And,
right.
And the reality is, you know, for my neighbor to have Halloween parties, to host a Halloween party, and the whole block gets together, and, you know, we have cookouts in the summer, you know, it's very much communal living, and we really look out for one another, really. And it is a family, because a lot of the older people I call aunt and uncle, and, you know, they know my family, and they've known me since I was in diapers, and they know me from, you know, some of them have been to my family's place back home in Jamaica.
Well, you know, it's as I get older, I get frustrated because I haven't seen nearly enough of places that I want to. And I'd love to hang out for a couple of weeks or a month in a place like Brooklyn or in a neighborhood in Chicago or, you know, in any number of places. Hang out down by the border in Texas. And get a sense, you know, not just passing through and staying at the motel, but to at least get a passing sense for what life is like and whether or not my theory that it's the same thing the world over, or is it that radically different? You know, is it that different if you walk down, if you've actually got a greengrocer's and, you know, the way it's set up, say, in Europe, where there's a guy who sells bread, there's another guy who sells meat, there's a guy who sells, you know, vegetables. And to go and grocery your dinner every day.
Well, the thing is, you know, in suburban life, and, you know, I've lived, you know, I've served that prison sentence for about 2 years. It is what it is, and it is about comparison. It is comparing clothing, comparing houses, comparing lifestyles, comparing cars. And I just don't know what to say for these kind of people. You know, I lived in Florida in Volusia County, the same county as Silver. And only one set of neighbors ever really talked to us. It's so isolating, it's not funny. And to get to our closest friends, we have to drive, you know, 4 miles over. Nothing like walking next door.
No. No, it's not. And the ice, yeah, sure. And it's this, and again, I can bring up the comparison again, Kevin. It's the same kind of isolation in a rural situation. Your best friend may be 15, 20 minutes away, or, you know, but you can also live 100 feet from your next door neighbor and never know what the inside of their house looks like.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we're all watching the TV. We're all wrapped up in ourselves. And that's why I keep talking about the horn being a means of eliminating the isolation that we face. We can at least hear each other's voices. And we can know that all over this country, there are places where if we knocked on the door and said, "Hi, you've never seen me before, but you've seen me, you know, and I know knew it, you," and you, it'd be like, "Hey, great, come on in." And that's inspiring.
Well, kids are our greatest treasure because kids is what usually create neighbors.
True, true. My backyard when I was a kid growing up, Kevin, was it was the gathering place for the rest of the neighborhood.
Yeah.
Pick up basketball game, football game.
Oh, yeah, well, that was my house when I was a kid where all the kids came over. And believe it or not, we used to ride our bicycles in our basement because, you know, brownstones are, if you ever been inside one, they are high and long. They're not spread out.
Yeah, no width, all depth.
Yeah, there is like 100 feet that you can ride a bicycle in. So kids literally used to ride, in the wintertime when it was too cold to ride outside, used to ride in our basement.
I love that.
You know, and the whole block used to come over and ride in our basement. Because we were the only family that had a fixed basement.
That's too cool. So, in moving back to Brooklyn, are you moving back to a family place, or have you just gotten a new one, or what?
No, I'm living in the house I grew up in.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, and, you know, it's probably going to be kept in the family. You know, it's not being sold anytime soon.
Well, that's the same vibe I get when I walk into my father's house down in Alabama, and you can't.
It's going to be like our family farm back home in Jamaica. You know, it's been in my family for like 5 or 6 generations, and then get sold.
Hang on to it for all you're worth, my friend. Hang on to it.
Yeah. Matter of fact, that's where I hope to die there. You know, and I've made that point.
Yeah. Well, there's, you know, the soil of the place that you come from gets into your blood.
Yeah.
And there's no getting around that. Well, Kevin, I appreciate you calling in. It's good to hear from you, my friend. And, you may be in D.C. for a little bit, but get back home quick, okay?
Okay. I definitely will. And I'll talk to you soon, okay, Bob?
All right. Take care, Kevin. Bye now.
Okay.
Travel safely. Our good friend Kevin, transitioning from D.C. back home to Brooklyn. That's inspiring. Oh, and a program note for you, if you don't mind. Strictly Confidential tonight will be a rerun. Peter has been called out to, you know, I think Peter must wear, figuratively, asbestos boots for all the computer fires that he stomps out. Bless his heart. He's been on the phone with me a bunch lately. And he's actually got real live, honest to God, paying customers who have crises too. I wouldn't want his job. It's a tough job, because, especially, you know, if there's anything involving the telephone. Because I tried to explain to a friend of mine about, you know, do A, B, C, D, E, and, you know, tain't easy. Not at all. So, I tell you what, let's, before we go to a break, let's see who's on the phone here. Hey, who have I got?
This is Alan.
Hey, Alan, how you doing, my friend?
Oh, hanging in there. How about you?
Getting along, I reckon.
Okay. I was just wondering, these conservatives are so greedy, and they don't care about the environment. I was thinking they might be trying to get a 2-for-1 out of this mountaintop removal, being that they don't only just want the coal, but maybe they want to build housing projects on top of those mountains. What do you think?
No, really, you can't do much with a mountaintop removal site, Alan. If they could make a buck on it, they would. But they tried to build and this is just a classic example, across the line in Kentucky, they tried to build a federal prison on a mountaintop removal site. And the thing is, because it's not the way the mountain was when God or nature made it, it settles. And it doesn't settle evenly. So that the foundation of this prison cracked, you know, and because the people there have a morbid, wonderful sense of humor, that prison became known as Sink Sink. And it's still settling to this day. So it's hard.
No,
there's virtually nothing you can do with it. I mean, they've tried to build golf courses on them, but you know, gaping cracks open up, and it's no. Now it's pure short-sighted greed. Come November the 10th, which I think is what, Saturday. Yeah. I'm going to try to take the family to a little vigil not too far from here, because mountaintop removal is coming to us.
Oh, no.
And just as I predicted several years ago that if we didn't stop it, it would be in other people's backyards, well, lo and behold, here it is. And it's gonna happen all up and down U.S. 60. It's going to happen down in eastern Greenbrier County. It's going to happen outside the little town where I live. People's wells are going to be messed up. People's home foundations are going to be shaken. There's going to be filth from coal dust all over creation. Children are going to start getting sicker than they already are. All the things that come with this business, and, you know, it's not a business. It's a criminal enterprise, you know.
Yeah, I want to get some photos of that mountaintop removal where they succeeded at it and show it to my father who grew up in that area. He'd probably be sick and stuff.
Well, the best thing you can do as far as photographs, I mean, there's plenty of them, and they're aerial views too, Alan, so you can't beat them. ILoveMountains.org.
Okay.
OVEC, OHVEC.org. And, of course, CRMW.net. And there's plenty of photographs.
There's probably links between those three sites also.
Oh yeah, oh yeah, and it's breathtaking.
It makes me think of the Brazilian rainforest. Once it's gone, it's gone, and tourists don't want to go look at mountaintop removed in the future.
No, they don't. And now, actually, I mean, I hate to compare it, Alan, but this is more insidious than what they've done to the rainforest, because you can make the argument that the rainforest, given an opportunity, can grow back. Just given the climate and the topography and the geographic location, it has a chance. With mountaintop removal, yeah, with mountaintop removal, once it's done, it's done. It'll never grow another tree. It won't grow anything but scrub grass. Can't build on it. Can't sink a well into it and get any water out of it. It's a disaster area. So, yeah, I guess there is a little bit of difference. Where are you on the road these days?
I'm on I-40 in Tennessee, driving through the mountains.
What are you seeing? I'm just curious, with the way oil by the barrel has been going up, what are you seeing in terms of gas prices?
$3.15 a gallon, I think, around that area.
Wow.
I drive for a company, so I don't have to buy it, thank goodness. But last time I bought diesel from my van, my van runs off diesel in my four-wheeler.
Mm-hmm.
I bought it at Citgo at $3.09 a gallon. I was glad to buy it at Citgo.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So about $3.15 a gallon for gasoline, the signs you're seeing and so forth in East Tennessee?
Yeah, that's what I noticed, yeah.
And it's going to go up from there.
Yeah, and I try to pay attention to what's going on with alternative energies, the stock prices, and it seems like it's doing pretty good. So I guess the higher the fuel price goes, the better the alternative energies go.
I think people will probably turn to it more and more as the time goes by, don't you?
Yeah, and even though they're not getting government help like the coal company and oil company are doing, they're still doing pretty good at hanging in there.
Now you've got a diesel-powered vehicle for your getting around ride. Have you considered converting that to where it'll burn the biodiesel stuff too?
Oh, that's one of the main reasons why I bought the thing, so I can do that in the future. It's still under warranty, but I think even under warranty, I can still use a certain percentage of biodiesel. I was looking towards the future when I bought that thing.
Well, I think it's yeah, I know what kind of vehicle it is, and it's very, very well considered on your part. Because, well, everybody thinks about diesel, and they think in terms of the stuff that you burn in your rig. And, you know,
yeah.
If you got it in a car, you know, you stop, you fuel up with it, it gets on your hands, you smell it for the rest of the day. But biodiesel's not like that.
Yeah, I was driving through Minnesota about a month ago, and I couldn't believe it. I saw this big tanker hauling biodiesel, and it didn't even have a hazmat tag on it.
Because it's not.
Yeah, it's not hazardous.
You know, you go down the road in something burning biodiesel, the worst you're going to smell like is the French fries being done.
I know it. I think it's a great idea. Not only that, I guess ethanol's pretty good, too.
Well, it is. It is. Except how intensive it is. How intensive is the process to leach to produce the alcohol from the corn?
Yeah, I heard something called cellulose ethanol, which I think is from leaves and all kinds of dead matter.
You can make alcohol out of just about anything.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I remember. Okay. I remember being in high school and doing the distillation of wood. That's basically the same principle. It was a matter of packing up a test tube full of popsicle sticks in that instance, and burning it in a sealed chamber, and then condensing it, and boom, on the other end of the experiment, wood alcohol.
Yeah, it seems crazy just to till up the soil all the time with plant things to get the alcohol when you could just throw it. Want some kind of grass and get the alcohol from that, when it grows back, mow it again. I think that's the way the switchgrass is supposed to be.
And the problem that evolves out of that is that farmers, for instance, in places that desperately need consumable edible corn, are switching over to this genetically engineered, like the Roundup Ready stuff, that you can't eat, but you can sell it for fuel purposes. I think the statistic I saw, Alan, said that if George Bush's goals for ethanol were actually met, it would take more corn than we grow in the entire United States, every last bit of it. You know, the stuff that goes into the cans of creamed corn, or the stuff that gets ground up and makes the Doritos, all of that would have to go in order to meet that ethanol goal. That's not to say, of course, that we shouldn't focus on these alternative energy sources, but it's when we get all single-minded about it that we get ourselves in trouble.
I know it. I think it's just all big subsidies for ABM and other companies like that.
Well, that's what it is, and that's why Mark Levine was talking about his opposition to the farm bill, because it's not a farm bill. It's corporate welfare. It's welfare for ADM. It's welfare for Monsanto. And if you're a family farmer who's been on his land for five generations and you've just been through a drought like what hit the South, well, too bad for you.
I drive through areas like in Arkansas where they plant a lot of rice, and just the streams, to look down at the streams when you drive through there, they just look so polluted, I think, from all the chemicals they use. Farming.
Oh, the runoff. We have in the eastern panhandle, and you've probably driven through plenty of times, the eastern panhandle of West Virginia, Alan, there's a lot of chicken farms. And because of the runoff from those chicken farms, there are hormonal things happening in the fish in the Potomac River that are affecting their ability to breed, that are literally gender changing on the water, the life in the water. Oh yeah, the runoff is horrible.
Just think about it. We send these spacecraft up to Mars and stuff, looking just for the faintest trace of life, and get all excited when we see a little ice on some other planet. Yet we're destroying this one. It doesn't make any sense.
Well, you're right. I believe in space exploration, and the money we spend on NASA is a fraction of anything's budget. But it has to be balanced against taking care of immediate needs. You remind me of something by mentioning that, Alan. I've got a story sitting here that I got from our blogger, Betsy. You know what's going on in Tabasco State in Mexico, right? The vast majority of that entire population are homeless, and the whole area is underwater from the hurricane.
Probably because they cut down the tree.
Well, among other things, development, that sort of thing. Do you know how much we've pledged in U.S. aid for those people in those pathetic circumstances? The Bush administration pledged $300,000, Alan.
And it probably goes to a tractor company to send tractors down there.
Oh, it'll probably be a contract for Halliburton or some such.
Yeah.
But somebody over at Our Descent, a blog, Our Descent into Madness, did the math. There are 800,000 refugees. We are sending $300,000. That's 37%, or that's 37 cents per Mexican hurricane victim. 37 cents.
Oh, that's generous.
Now, we pay Halliburton $29 a day to feed our soldiers. And they manage to feed our soldiers rotten meat and rotten vegetables. They've been busted a number of times. They use slave labor that didn't even know it was going to work in Iraq in the first place.
Sometimes they insist they have two meals or three meals so they can go double their pay.
Right.
I saw that on a movie, on a documentary.
And so we've got $50 million that, as this blog notes, we dump into the so-called war on drugs. We are into $500 billion for our war in Iraq. And a humanitarian crisis strikes an area not too terribly far from the territorial confines of the United States. And we think that that is worth 37 cents per person. I read that and my eyes crossed, Alan. How can a nation call itself good that looks at the suffering of others and says, well, I got 37 cents a person for you?
But the average person doesn't know those statistics you just brought out where it goes up to 37 cents a person.
It makes me want to weep.
Yeah.
But then again, we didn't care much about the people with Katrina, and they're our fellow countrymen. So, you know, we're in the midst of a serious hate on for Mexicans. So I as far as the Republicans and such are concerned, it's just as well off if they drowned.
I heard that there was a hurricane that hit Cuba that just knocked out quite a few houses. It was about as bad as Katrina. Not one life got lost because the whole government worked together, moving everybody out of the danger zone. But Cuba's a bad place, according to these Republicans.
Well, sure it is. You know, they've got cigars and rum, and they've got free health care, and they've got an incredibly high literacy rate, and their infant mortality rate is lower than the United States, and their maternal death rate is lower than the United States. You know, there's got to be something wrong with them.
Yeah, and Castro doesn't smoke cigars anymore. He quit smoking.
Yeah, I don't think Fidel's doing a lot of anything these days.
Yeah, he pushed that off.
Except hanging on to his existence.
Yeah, I just hope he wasn't poisoned by the CIA. I wouldn't doubt it.
Well, I wouldn't either, but I think this is probably just life catching up with him. And the reason he's hanging on so hard is I think Fidel Castro knows that when he passes away, we are going to descend on Cuba like a vulture on a dead possum in the middle of the road.
Maybe his brother hang up pretty good.
Well, they're not that far apart in age, so, you know, it's a little dodgy.
Oh, yeah. I hear that they're doing pretty good when it comes to agriculture. Even though we have that oil embargo against them, they're doing pretty good when it comes to growing crops organically, other than here in the United States. You don't know what kind of...
They get some fuel support from Venezuela as well.
Oh, that's good.
And of course, you know, as somebody who smokes an occasional cigar, God knows not a Cuban one, can't afford them, but their tobacco crop gets hammered from storms that blow through, like what you were just describing. And what you were describing about their loss of life in a hurricane versus what happened at Katrina or what happened in Tabasco State in Mexico, there's an answer. There's a reason for that, Alan. And that is the administration that is in power in Mexico now is a very conservative one, similar to and in line with many of the political and economic philosophies of the Bush administration and the hardcore Republicans.
Yeah.
And those political philosophies say that people don't have a legitimate need to be served by the state, that government exists as a life support system for business.
I think it was Lopez Obrador who ran against this guy. He was more like Franklin Roosevelt.
Yes, and odds are the election was stolen from him because they had electronic vote rigging machines in that election.
Yeah, and also a lot of people were purged off the voting list by a company, I think, based in Atlanta, Georgia. I can't recall the name of it right offhand.
Oh, was that ES&S?
No.
Oh, no. Choice Point. Choice Point.
Yeah, Choice Point. Yeah, I had my run in Choice Point one time.
Well, they're a fine bunch, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Alan, we're coming up on the news. It's good talking to you. Are you heading home or are you heading out?
Oh, I'm headed out. I'm going to be out for a couple more weeks.
Oh, wow.
I enjoy driving a truck. This is kind of... Sometimes it's more relaxing than when I get home because I have so many things to do.
Well, if you're running through the mountain,
your show.
If you're running up the mountain, running through the mountains, it's got to be beautiful about now with all the colors.
Oh, the colors are just great, really great. Nice orange, reds, greens, real nice.
Well, stay safe by all means. And you got any more paintings in the works?
Yes, I'm working on one right now. Hopefully, it'll work out pretty good, but I still like it.
Oh, cool. Wonderful. Yeah. Well, send us a picture.
Ideas from all these colors.
Well, send us a photograph when you get it done, would you?
Okay. All right.
All right. You take care, Alan. Drive safe.
All right.
Bye now.
All right. Goodbye.
Love hearing from Alan. Get an idea of, you know, what the world looks like from 1 minute to the next and 1 mile to the next. What's going to happen to prices in the... I mean, you know what's happening to you. You know what $100 a barrel oil is going to do to you. Or do you? What's $100 a barrel oil going to do to the price of milk? What's it going to do to a head of lettuce? I think I bought green peppers today at 90 cents a pepper. I don't think sitting there watching the TV America has the first clue. Of course, I don't know. You sit there and you say you explain to TV watching America that what they're seeing here is a direct result of the guy that they won't support removing from office. You can make an argument maybe that not we. But damn sure they have earned it. Have earned it. On the other hand, 37 cents per Mexican hurricane victim. Well, you know how it is with these up by your own bootstraps Republicans. 37 cents, that's plenty. That's more than enough. They didn't earn that. They should be grateful to have the 37 cents sitting there on top of the palm fronds of their little huts there that are almost underwater. Can you get your mind around that? Are you embarrassed? Did you know about that? Thanks, Betsy. Did you know that? 37 cents per Mexican hurricane victim. $300,000 to help out people in desperate straits who number at almost a million. And the entire state, mind you. You know, get your little Google Earth out or whatever. Look at the size of Tabasco. Compare it with a state here in the U.S. and then say to yourself, the entire state underwater. I guess we should be grateful. Because if it was one of our states underwater, well, Glenn Beck would have to get on the radio and talk about how much he hates those people for being alive. Maybe if one of them was seen on camera weeping, Rush Limbaugh could make fun of them. I've got examples of both of those. I think maybe we'll have a run at that in the next hour. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. You're listening to independent radio, listener-supported. You're listening to The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
You want to save big.
This is the Quality News Network. Pakistan's deposed Chief Justice urging the country's lawyers to revolt against President General Musharraf's imposition of martial law. A crackdown on opposition to emergency rule has put thousands of protesters behind bars, the Chief Justice under house arrest, reaching other resistors by cell phone. Pakistani government officials are considering a delay in parliamentary elections, despite Western demands that a vote be held on time in January. In northern Afghanistan, a bomb attack struck lawmakers as they were greeted by a crowd of schoolchildren on a visit to a sugar factory. More than two dozen people were killed, including five lawmakers. Many of the dead were children. 81 people were wounded. It is being called the worst civilian bomb attack in northern Afghanistan recorded history. A federal judge has ruled that Iraqi torture victims and their relatives can go ahead with a lawsuit against a defense contractor who provided interrogators to the U.S. military in Iraq. Filed in 2004, the suit alleges that defense contractor CACI International interrogators took part in abuse and mistreatment of Iraqi nationals being detained at Abu Ghraib and other prisons in Iraq. The Senate Judiciary Committee approved the nomination of Michael Mukasey as the next U.S. Attorney General. By today's 11-8 vote, committee members passed the nomination onto the floor of the full Senate, virtually assuring Mukasey's eventual confirmation. A vote is expected by sometime next week. Today throughout the U.S. is Election Day. Voters go to the polls primarily to elect local officials and decide local and statewide propositions. French President Nicolas Sarkozy is dining with President and Mrs. Bush tonight at the White House. The Bushes are hosting a formal state dinner in Sarkozy's honor. Mr. Bush is hoping to warm relations with France after several chilly years with Sarkozy's predecessor, Jacques Chirac. And this weekend, the Bushes host German Chancellor Angela Merkel at their ranch in Crawford, Texas. King Abdullah of Saudi Arabia met with Pope Benedict XVI today at the Vatican. It's the first meeting between the head of the Roman Catholic Church and a Saudi monarch. The two sides have no diplomatic ties. The king travels next to Germany and Turkey. You're listening to the Quality News Network. A look at science and business news is just ahead. But first, this message.
Looking to find the best in the USA? Come to Boulevards.com. We're the best address in city guides across the U.S. For the best information in travel, Boulevards.com gives you the most up-to-date choices for the best in dining, hotels, entertainment, adventure, and exciting tips to make your holiday the best it can be. Whether you're a local or just looking for great getaway tips, go to Boulevards.com and get the best. Be independent of search engines. Make your choices. We're Boulevards.com. Come visit us at SanFrancisco.com, SanJose.com, Carmel.com, WashingtonDC.com, PaloAlto.com, Seattle.com, Oakland.com, SanAntonio.com, Denver.com, and many more. WeAreBoulevards.com, the best in your visiting the USA. Come visit us at Boulevards.com.
NASA scientists say their recent discovery of a fifth planet orbiting a star much like our sun could be an indication that there are many such solar systems across the universe. Scientists say it took 18 years of painstaking research to locate the five planets. The newly discovered planet is 45 times the size of Earth and may resemble Saturn. Dow Chemical and food company Dole have been ordered to pay more than $3 million for exposing workers to dangerous pesticides that left six employees infertile. The Nicaraguan workers have harvested bananas during the 1970s and the 80s. Crude oil prices jumping up 3% to a new all-time high today of $97 a barrel. The Department of Energy will release a report on energy supplies tomorrow. Meantime, light sweet crude oil trading at $96.70 on the New York Mercantile Exchange. Wall Street bouncing back at the close today as ExxonMobil pushed the Dow Industrials higher with oil prices rising. The tech sector saw positive numbers while shares of the electronic commerce company Alibaba.com almost tripled in its Hong Kong debut. At today's close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average up 117 points to end at 13,661, NASDAQ up 30 points, S&P 500 up 18. Always more on our website at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Bob.
Yes, sirree, Bob. That's good. And in this portion of the programming, as promised, and it only got worse during the news, George Bush is sitting down to a dinner of hummingbirds' tongues and lark's vomit canapes and pâté de foie gras, maybe some escargot. You know, just like Mama used to make for Nicolas Sarkozy, the right-wing president of France. Sitting down to dinner. Very nice dinner. Got the fine official Bush administration fine china out, white tablecloths, silverware that's made of silver, liveried service, more coffee, more tea, wine please, red, white. While 800,000 people, not too awfully far to the south, wait on rooftops, fall into the fetid waters of a flood zone, float dead face down in that water, while, 38 more Afghan citizens are dead as the hell and damnation of Iraq and the failure there spreads to the east. While a nation, Pakistan, nuclear armed and filled to the gills with fundamentalist idiots, not much different from our own, seeks an end to democratic processes, and the dictator there, who has suspended the Constitution, has truly crossed the Rubicon, knowing that if he succeeds, at best he retires somewhere with a significant portion of stolen funds from his country, retires somewhere preferably in Europe, say Switzerland maybe, and if he fails, they will separate his head from his shoulders. That's what you call incentive for a dictator, a brutal dictator who kills his own people and has weapons of mass destruction, nuclear ones. While all of that goes on, George Bush dines in splendid luxury and thinks not a thought about any of the things that I have just mentioned to you. Now, bear in mind, of course, that his followers and his supporters can't say much along those lines to you about that. No, instead, they have to attack children and make fun of children. Children who weep for what is being done to their homes. Case in point, America's biggest gas bag. Case in point, the oxymoron, America's junkie, Flush Flemball. A high school graduate, a young woman, 18 years old, testified before Edward Markey's committee yesterday morning, describing the effect global warming has had on her Inuit homeland in Alaska and the particular impacts on her local community. Well, if someone shows weakness, what does a Republican do? If anyone shows weakness, a Republican goes in for the kill, because that's what Republicans are. This is from yesterday's Flush Flemball radio program, what passes for political commentary. Political commentary. Oh, rat fart. It's gone. Let's try this.
About next. All of this is just... It is just a sham. And here, you got to hear this 13-year-old girl. Let me find her name here. I get to put it at the bottom of the stack. I thought we were through with it, but I'm getting requests to hear this again. And I know what the requests really aren't to hear this. The requests are for my reaction to this. This is Cheryl Charlie Lockwood crying in House testimony, Ed Markey's committee today, the House Energy Independence and Global Warming Committee.
Just through my lifetime, I've seen so many changes in our community that it just hurts to not be able to have our... It's really scary to lose our tradition, our culture. And we've been living here for thousands of years. And it's not just that we're losing our food, it's losing our homes. And because we are spiritually connected and emotionally and physically connected to our homes, and there are so many communities that are in trouble.
Yeah, that's true. A lot of communities in trouble over a lot of things. Go to New Orleans. Talk about losing homes. Sorry. I'm just reminded here of the old... Remember the old television PSA that used...
How dare he? How dare he say, go to New Orleans, when he himself made fun of the people floating face down in those fetid waters? And did you catch the mockery? See, a sick bastard like a Republican, like Rush Limbaugh, thinks it's big fun when people suffer. They think it's bigger fun when they cry when they suffer.
Back in the old days when we were kids, Iron Eyes Cody, the Native American, standing by the roadside as, you know, worthless Americans drive by on the way to their trailer parks and so forth.
Do the right-wingers ever hear the way he describes them? worthless Americans driving to their trailers. And understand that it's them he's talking about. It's not you. It's not me. It's not liberals. It's the trash that listens to him and keeps the advertisers happy and calls from Busted Knuckle and says, Mega Busted Knuckle Dittos, Rush. Dang, you sure are smart. Nah, they don't get it. They don't understand that the joke is on them.
Throwing trash out the window of the car. A Native American. Turns out he wasn't. He's an actor made up, but doesn't matter. Little tear starts rolling down his cheek over what the white Europeans have done to his country. This stuff is it's oppressive. It's always been around. Shreveport, Louisiana. This is Chad. Chad, you're up first today on the EIB Network.
You're going to love this.
Hi, Rush. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet, sir. Make it count.
Well, here's the deal.
Make it count.
I'm going to make the assumption that the young lady testifying...
Hey, can I ask you guys to do me a favor? If I ever get to the point with this program where I take a call and ask someone what's on their mind and then tell them to make it count... Will you do me a favor and just bury me in email telling me to stuff it? Make it count. Make it count. How do you make anything count on a program that feasts on 12-year-old little boys and 18-year-old girls? How do you make it count? But, of course, Whitey is calling in and Rush is going to make it count.
Of Inuit descent, or
I would think so, because the Inuits have joined the crusade up there. Yeah.
How did her people get to North America from the Asian continent?
Well, odds are, buddy, we can't look to you to know, because, well, never mind. Wait for this.
Didn't they come across a land bridge that has melted?
I don't know. They might have hitched a ride with the Vikings. Who the hell knows?
No,
I know you're right. I'm just on a blue funk here. I'm in a real cynical mood here about all this. Go ahead. But make your point. It's a good point.
They tell me that the Inuits came across a...
Who told you? You learned it in a college classroom. We can't trust it.
Oh, what a jerk. He's not even solicitous to his own people. Who told you? Did you hear it in college? If you heard it in college, if you heard it from a professor, we can't trust it. War on Christmas, war on drugs, war on terrorism, on... Oh, learning!
No, just a public school education, but if that did in fact melt, why did it melt and there is no connection to Russia... between Alaska and Russia today, there must have been some global warming in the past.
Well, we know there has been. So your question, how'd they get there?
Dumbass alert, doofus, idiot alert. The Bering Land Bridge formed, of course you know this, the Bering Land Bridge formed because vast quantities of the Earth's water was locked up in glaciers. You know, 3-4 miles thick glaciers that in the North American side of things spread all the way down to Missouri and Pennsylvania. But no, it's because there must have been global warming in the past. And since there was global warming in the past, well, wait till you hear the reasoning that comes out of the thin, gray settlings inside, between this idiot's ears that pass in Republican quarters for brains.
Yeah, if she's worried about the climate changing, it's been changing since the beginning of time.
You know, of course it has. Here's the thing, folks. With all of these scientists out there making the case, this so-called consensus, saying that global warming is happening.
You know, this so-called consensus saying global warming is happening. You know, all the scientists except for the ones in the pay of ExxonMobil. Yeah, that consensus. These scientists, what do they know? They're just running around dealing with reality. Why, we've got an entire fantasy world that we live in where there are elves and unicorns.
Pausing it, we have reported and shared with you any number of times the number of scientists among that consensus who now say it's too late. It's simply too late to reverse what we've done.
Ah, so it's too late, so eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. How can people stand to be conservatives? I mean, what's that line from, one of those police songs where Sting sings, "The ache in the ache inside his head so bad it makes his eyeballs hurt," or something like that? Isn't just life as a conservative one long Excedrin headache number 657932.821? Isn't that life as a conservative where you have to look at the very real world you live in and imagine that everything is just a bunch of made up crap foisted upon you by a liberal media, and that if the liberals would just leave you alone, it would all be Frisbees and wheat checks, and we could be so happy, and there wouldn't be any brown people, and, oh, it would be just all, it would be a little winter wonderland all in white.
And it's, let me tell you what the real purpose of all of this is. It's
oh, do tell,
story is out of London. Sacrifices, including higher paying bills and taxes to help redress climate change, according to a global survey. Today, the survey found 83% of those questioned believe lifestyle changes would be necessary to cut emissions of climate warming carbon gases and would gladly pay them. And that's what this is about. Or older Americans choose.
Okay, Rush. Put down the OxyContin and step away from the medicine bottle. Did you get that? The whole global warming thing is something that us liberals have cooked up so that we can raise taxes on poor, innocent citizens. It's just a means of getting the government more of your money. That's all. I'm so glad that Rush lives, you know, because we found his address one time on one of the, I think it was one of his arrest reports. And so I took Google Earth and went and looked up the address and found his little compound sitting there right on the ocean. And as much as I know that global climate change harms this planet, I'm hoping the entire Ross ice shelf drops off of Antarctica and the entire Greenland glaciation melts and runs off into the sea, and I want Rush Limbaugh up to his third or fifth freaking chin in the global warming that doesn't exist. You think when Russia's multi-million dollar compound is underwater, the federal government will find more than 37 cents for his stinking hides rescue? Do you? Because I do. Yeah, I really do. Can't talk about the success in Iraq. Can't talk about the success in Afghanistan. Can't talk about the success in caring for America's children. Can't talk about the success in the recovery from Katrina that is now 2 years gone. Can't talk about the success in the economy. Can't talk about the success in raising up the middle class and shoring up the strength of the middle class. Can't talk about the success of bringing the poor out of poverty. Can't talk about the success in international diplomacy. Can't talk about their successes against domestic terrorism. Can't talk about the success in the war on drugs. I guess that just leaves attacks on little 18-year-old girls from Alaska. What a stud he is, huh? I mean, what a man. No wonder he's had 3 wives. They just line up. Oh, waiting for him to divorce the last one so they can just get close to his manly masculine essence. His purity of essence. His, oh my God, his aqua velva smell that probably makes Chris Matthews just weep in his sleep. But that ain't all. Oh, no, no, no. No, no, that's not all. Because, you see, it's one thing right after another, and it's all a set piece. It's all of a part. It's all everything connected. Remember the story we had a little while back about the brown folks who were gathered in by the Immigrations and Customs Enforcement agents, the Icemen, who descend upon people, rip families apart, and in these particular instances gave them mind-altering drugs that constituted chemical restraints and tried to slip them on a plane to get them out of the country, the only thing that saved them being that the airline itself would not take them in that condition, whacked out of their minds. Remember that story? It turned out to be true, by the way. Borne out by physicians, everything. Yeah, it's just true. Or the story about the Icemen who descended on a meat packing plant in Utah, a union meat packing plant in Utah, and separated the workers by darkness of skin color. Lighter-colored Mexicans were segregated away from darker-colored Mexicans, and the darker-colored Mexicans were assumed to be illegal aliens, even though they were some of them were American citizens with children at home. And they were shipped away to internment camps. Do you remember that story? I remember that story. The Union damn sure remembers that story. That's the ICE. Immigrations and Customs Enforcement, the Icemen. It was ICE that was called out a couple of weeks ago when some Democrats wanted to have a press conference about the DREAM Act. And a young woman was going to speak, and Tom Tancredo called out the Icemen, and they had to cancel the press conference. Because the Democrats weren't willing to look at to stare down the Icemen and say, "You will take this young lady away from us over our dead bodies." No, not sorry. That whole "our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor" business doesn't happen in the Congress anymore. With very few exceptions, one of whose name is Dennis Kucinich. That ICE. The Immigrations and Customs Enforcement agents who maintain a private prison in Texas where children are imprisoned behind barbed wire fences, their only crime being that they are children of people that ICE doesn't think should be in America. Yeah, that ICE, that Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Well, the lady, and I use the term loosely, oh dear, that's just trouble. The lady who runs all of that is a harpy by the name of Julie Myers. She is the head of Immigration and Customs Enforcement. She is, in fact, an exalted mucky-muck within the Bush administration. And being as how the end of October is sort of a festive occasion, Julie Myers hosted a Halloween costume party. It was attended by some 50 to 75 people. It was a benefit, a fundraiser, for something called the Combined Federal Campaign. And that's sort of like the United Way. I don't know, maybe it's even associated with the United Way. I don't know. But it's a collection, a combine, a co-op of charities, if you will. Julie Myers threw the party. And, of course, it's a Halloween party. It's a costume party. You know, I doubt if it was nearly as cool as the costume party that we heard about on Strictly Confidential last week, the one that Glenn Rivera hosted, where one couple showed up, one all done up in bandages. It was a mummy. And the other half the couple showed up done up in leather, and that was the daddy. But it was a costume party, and I'm sure there was a pirate and a mummy. And I'm sure there was a princess or an evil wicked witch or, yeah, you know, the usual Halloween suspects. So, of course, they were going to announce who had the best costume. And Julie Myers, head of ICE, an organization that routinely destroys the families of brown-skinned people in this country, was one of three people who judged the costumes. Well, I kind of like the pirate. Oh, I don't know. I like the ballerina. And then they noticed something. There was a guy, and, you know, this is ICE, and they take people away to jail, so you can understand the theme, and they kind of get off on it. There was a guy done up in a striped prison outfit. You know, the works. He had dreadlocks. Dark-skinned. And ho, 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 man, he's the best. Oh, that's funny. That's funny. They noted the originality of his costume. They even took pictures and put them up on the ICE website up until they were removed when this began to get around. What began to get around, Bob? Well, let me tell you. It turns out that the guy with the dark skin, the dreadlocks, and the prison garb was a white guy in blackface. Oh, but wait, this is another one of those Ginsu commercials. There's more. The guy in the prison garb with the dreadlocks and the blackface, who was actually a white guy, when it was mentioned to them, a spokesman for Julie Myers, the head of ICE, said, "Why, most people in the room didn't realize he was wearing makeup at all. It was, you know, it was another brown-skinned man in prison garb with dreadlocks. I mean, that's what they look like, isn't it?" It is late 2007 in the United States of America. And in late 2007 in the United States of America, nooses hang from trees. In late 2007, in the United States of America, nooses hang from the doors of African-American professors at Columbia University. In late 2007, in America, nooses are found surreptitiously tucked into the sea bags of cadets of the United States Coast Guard Academy. It is late 2007 in America, and the best costume at an official government fundraiser Halloween costume ball is a man in prison garb done up in blackface. And in late 2007, in America, the hostess of that party gives the best costume award to the man in prison garb, dreadlocks, and blackface, and complains that she didn't realize he was wearing makeup. Well, it just so happens that we here at the Head On Radio Network and Head On with Bob Kincaid have been able, it turns out, I mean, it wasn't just a matter of looking around and saying who's got the best costume, you know, that there's more that goes into this stuff. and we were able to obtain the talent portion of the program, in which the guy in blackface performed. Here's what he sang.
Now what's the matter, honey? There's a tear in your eye. Do white folks say they don't know where you go when you die? Come to your mammy, dear. And listen here, I'll tell you where those colored children go when they leave here. Now there's a happy land above the sky so blue. And listen, hon, what's waiting there for you? Come lay your black Yankee head in a bit on a pillow of white and sleep tonight. Oh, while the angels will watch over you every night, the fiddle king pop up from the ground. We'll sweet molasses all around. Old Uncle Joe is up laying tunes upon that ever-loving old banjo. The streets are all paved with gold, I am told. Every bird in the sky has diamond eyes. Now ain't that nice? Every little kinky-headed girl and boy has the cutest silver pony just for a toy in the place they call that Piccaninny Paradise.
Shoot fire, no wonder he won. He sure can sing. Oh my God. That, of course, no, it was not the talent portion. I was pulling your leg. Hope to God you know that. That's actually one of the great minstrel singers of the late 1920s. Emmett Miller. Would you have been surprised, however, if you'd found out that... Nah, you wouldn't have. That's one of the problems of living in America in late 2007. We're all fresh out of surprised. And we're fresh out of horrified. And we're fresh out of disgusted. And we're fresh out of amazement. Can I, now, chat room, callers, emailers, you tell me. Am I out of line? Should this woman be fired immediately, this Julie Myers? Should she be dumped without a second thought? I'm not, okay, you know, she's not responsible for how people show up. But when somebody shows up in blackface as the hostess of the party, maybe she walks over and says, you know, I don't think this is appropriate, and it hasn't been appropriate for 75 years. Go wash your face or something. Oh, wait a minute, I forgot. She didn't realize the guy was in blackface because they all looked the same to her. The Department of Homeland Security will investigate a Halloween costume party. Oh, okay, as long as there's going to be an invitation or an investigation. Now, the guy who showed up in blackface has been directed by Homeland Security to take administrative leave while the investigation is conducted. Meanwhile, as I look at the news report, I can't see anything about Julie Myers stepping down. Can't see anything about Julie Myers being canned, sacked, fired. Oh, but wait. She did contact the National Association of African Americans in the Department of Homeland Security. And the group said, quote, that they appreciate her reaching out to us so quickly in order to keep us apprised of the matter, and we commend her on moving so swiftly toward appropriate corrective action, and please don't beat me, lady. Oh, sorry, no, the please don't beat me was, no. Meanwhile, Michael Chertoff, who looks a lot like Skeletor, supports the actions that Assistant Secretary Myers has taken, according to Laura Kuechner, who is the DHS spokeswoman. You know, she's the DHS spokeswoman because, what was it, a year and a half, 2 years ago, that the DHS spokesman got caught trolling for little boys? Whoops the baby. Kuechner said, the secretary has asked for an inquiry into the facts surrounding the incident. Once the facts have been determined, we will take all necessary and appropriate actions. Just not against Julie Myers. Not against the woman who hosted the party. Not against the woman who did not ask this person in blackface to leave because she didn't realize he was in blackface and they all looked the same to her. Not the woman who sat on the panel that gave the guy the best costume award for his originality and creativity. Imagine that. In the Department of Homeland Security, in late 2007 in America, it's highly creative and original to show up in prison guard garb in dreadlocks in blackface. In the Bush administration, that passes for originality and creativity. What would they have done if he had showed up with some fried chicken and a watermelon? They would have been absolutely out of their skulls. Oh, that's hilarious! Oh, my God! I mean, we're not talking about the kind of humor that, was prevalent in, say, Blazing Saddles. You couldn't make Blazing Saddles in 2007 in America because it really is that racist here now. But you couldn't, you know, the stuff that Richard Pryor and Mel Brooks wrote, no, we're not going to have any of that stuff going on here. I'm amazed. I'm just amazed. Now, what do you want to bet? Well, you want to bet the guy was wandering around the party, maybe saying stuff like this.
Hey, where are the white women at?
I wouldn't be at all surprised. then again, maybe the reason this person won the best costume, most original costume award had something to do with Julie Meyer's own reaction.
Excuse me while I whip this out.
Yeah. Julie Myers. Class act.
Oh, it's true. It's true. It's true. It's true.
And I'm sure it wasn't just a matter of her talking about the originality and creativity of the costume. And, you know, there was more to go with it, too.
Oh, what a nice guy.
Dig it. You are paying that woman. You're paying that woman. I'm paying that woman. We're paying that woman. ICE officials briefed congressional staffers about the costume party this week as a courtesy. Well, they only extended that courtesy after the congressional staffer contacted them, having received an anonymous tip about the man who showed up to the ICE agent Halloween party in striped prison garb, dreadlocks, and blackface. See, I first read this and I thought, oh, man. What a story. Oh, this is a real knee slapper. Yeah, this is funny. Now I read it again. It got less funny. And I read it again. Less funny still. By the time I'd read through the whole thing, just to get it fixed in my tiny little mind, it wasn't funny at all. People painted up like this guy do so at the expense of people who had no body paint on when they were floating face down in the waters in the Ninth Ward, when they roasted to death in attics above the water level but far from help in the Ninth Ward. People without the body paint continue to suffer along the Mississippi Gulf Coast. People of similar skin color, perhaps even with the dreadlocks, who knows? As we speak, sit on rooftops in Tabasco State in Mexico. And Julie Myers, oh, I ain't seen such a funny costume, I tell you. Oh, it was just precious. Who would have thought of coming to a party for the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Police dressed as a convict in striped clothes? Who would have thought of such a thing? That is so original. We need to give them an award. They could have really, really hit the heights if he had a buddy who would have come as a Klansman with a noose around his neck. The guy in the prison garb's neck, that is. I mean, they would have been the hit of the party. Welcome to Bushmerica. It's spelled with three K's. Right? Isn't it? Is this just an isolated incident? Oh, Bob, it's just a little Halloween party and they made a mistake. For heaven's sakes, move on! How am I supposed to move on? That's not an innocent mistake and, you know, this is not a boating accident. This is the reality of America. This is the reality of America, where crime is on the rise after years and years of steady decline under the policies of a Democratic president named Bill Clinton in the 90s. It's on the way back up. There's a rather disturbing study out that was recently commissioned by the Anti-Defamation League. It turns out that anti-Semitism is on the rise in America, too. Went to an all-time low in the 90s. But we got those God-fearing, Jesus-worshipping, moral family values voterin' Republicans in office. And look what happens to the hate. Do you want to know why? Do you not know why? I'm sure you know why. We've got it because of what is happening to the middle class. Why is it always easy to scapegoat a group in any cultural circumstance? It's always easy to scapegoat a minority group when the majority is feeling pressed. Why is it easy to scapegoat Mexicans who work for $2.50 an hour scrubbing toilets? Because the working poor and the working middle class in America are feeling the pinch of Republican policies that flow, not like their wealth, from the top down. You see. That's how hate gets hold, because then some demagogue can come along, great or small, and say, it's not your problem, you're not doing anything wrong, it's them, it's the Jews, it's the blacks, it's the gays, it's the atheists, it's the Mexicans, it's the Muslims, it's not your problem. And therein you have an encapsulated definition of right-wing radio. It is late 2007. In America, but it might just as well be late 1857. Oh, a quick reminder before I forget about it. John Fox, been away a while. John Fox and Foxed Up will come your way tonight for the first time in a long time. On the beginning of a new time slot, new schedule, Monday through Thursday here on the Horn at midnight. All Foxed Up. Coming your way right after the Cup of Joe, late night cup at 11 p.m. Strictly Confidential is, as I said, a rerun, but you've got live radio coming your way at 11 p.m. and at midnight, so stick around for that, please. Let's see who's on the phone. Wait a minute, let me do this first. Hey, who have I got?
You got me, man.
Hey, Wayne, what's up, man?
All same. Listen, you know what you were talking about. Picking out groups and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And, you know, that's a result of what we're going through with, you know, I mean, they brag about how great the economy is and we created 160,000 jobs and blah, 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 which is, you know, all a bunch of junk. The economy ain't, you know, I mean, the economy isn't good.
Right.
Instead of attacking the problem, the higher up that, you know, you're scared to death of, you pick on, you know, you decide maybe has it a little worse than you, and then they ain't worth it.
But, right.
You know, it's this. I mean, we've been brainwashed since, you know, kids that we were the best, the greatest, the better, ever. You know, the rest of the world was just a bunch of savages and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And too many people bought into that. I don't know. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it makes an abundance of sense. No matter, you know, and because of that brainwashing, Wayne, no matter how bad it gets here, well, it's as good as it can get because it's America. You know what I mean? So we don't have to try anymore.
You know, I mean, I believe the majority, the great majority of Americans still think got a thing to say, that we are not. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Don't you think of it? And it's so totally untrue.
Yes, it is. But as long as we can point to somebody else, and, oh, they're the problem, then we don't have to work on them.
We could point, but we got to point in the right way. Up.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. It's not where you point or where I point. You know, I don't necessarily point my finger at the guy who showed up at that party the way he did. It was extremely poor taste. It was stupid. But I point my finger at the higher up, just like what you just said.
That's, you know. And you know, what the people that are pointing down, what they have to realize is that their people, the people that they're pointing down to, are their allies and friends. And, you know, that those, they have to join together with those groups, and then everybody point up. And if that happens, it's the same thing like the union and this strike that's going on and stuff like that. More and more people are joining in the support of the nurses. And if the nurses get enough support that they could stay out there that long, they can beat ARH. There is no doubt in my mind. The hard part is keeping the people together. And, you know, other organizations coming in and donating food and money and, you know, taking care of medical needs and stuff like that, allows them to continue. And that's what we have to do.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like I'm rambling. But
No, you're not. You're not. You're making perfectly good sense.
I fight every damn day, and sometimes, to be honest with you, man, it gets depressing.
You're damn right
so
it does.
Fights. Huh?
You're damn right it does. Yeah, you're out there fighting. How many others are fighting with you? How many?
Not enough.
Right, not enough.
Not
and
enough.
How many places can you look and say, hey, you could be fighting, but you could be standing beside me fighting, but they got reason, you know, they can't do it. You know, maybe it's the city council of Beckley.
Right. I picked up, I was going to a meeting the other day, and, you know, like, I've got these, like, fake leather folder things that you get for going to different, you know, and I don't know how many I got of them. But I grabbed one the other day because I was going to a meeting and I knew there was a notepad in it. Well, I opened it up and there were pictures stuffed in, and I pulled them out. And it was the picture of me in 2005 out in the hospital with the sign that I have in the back of the, you know, West Virginia Building Trade Support these, and ARH is involved in union. Which is what they are.
Yeah.
This is from when you got fired.
Yeah.
That's from when you got fired. The picture ended up me, the truck, and I'm on the cell phone, and it was in the paper. You know, and I told, when I remember when I first saw it, I said, I wish the caption said, "Why is Wayne alone?"
No kidding.
Why is he all by himself? You know what I mean?
I do. And that's not you griping. I mean that's one of the most legitimate. And see, it's you. I heard the frustration. Our dear friend Phil, who calls from Daytona Beach, Florida, he says, you know, we're out there every Thursday handing out flyers demanding an end to the war, demanding impeachment. He said, it's the same people every week.
Yes, it is. That's exactly right. That's exactly. And, you know, so instead of, you know, looking for one that you believe to be lower than you or in a worse and pick on them, go talk to the person, join with them. But, you know, we have causes and, you know, pointing at the top.
Yeah, I'm looking in the chat room and bless her heart. Nanette says, tell Wayne I'd be there if I could afford the gas to get there.
You know.
And
I truly understand that. I truly understand that. You know, but things are, I'm going to keep on fighting. Things are optimistic. The nurses picketed the mayor's office yesterday. I missed that when I had to, I was doing things and stuff.
Yeah.
But listen. listen, let me end this on a... Got to tell you what I heard on Oberman.
Okay.
Some person was doing a television interview. And I guess it was a little long, so the moderator, reporter, the hell he was trying to speed things up, and he said, have to get going here. He says, you know, the next president of the United States has a very heavy schedule. And Fred replied, so do I. Is that telling, Bob?
Yeah, that's a confession.
I would say so. Say so.
Oh, that's precious.
Anyway, brother, hang in there, man.
All right, we're gonna. You know, we're just happy Verizon didn't fry us this time.
Yeah, thank God for that. They tried though.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. They put a little juice down the line.
Well, we did. We got a different lifesaver. Lightsaber.
Yeah, and we got a better Jedi operating it too. I love these guys at CityNet.
I guess we do. We'll call them Obi-Wan.
All right, take it easy, Wayne.
All right, brother, have a good one, man.
You too. Bye-bye. Right. And let's see, I'm going to run over just a little bit because we'll just run into the news and we'll be fine. And who have I got?
Bob?
Yeah.
This is from Boston.
Oh, hey, how are you?
I'm good. I just got back from working the polls. We had a mayor in Quincy, where I actually live, and this year I worked as a poll worker, and I just wanted to call and encourage people to volunteer, and it's a good experience to have. I'm 38, and I'm by far the youngest person there. It's mostly the ladies and my diehard guys, I guess. But
right.
I great experience. Our precinct has a little over 2,000 people in it, and we had over 1,000 voters, and for a mayoral race, and I think that is encouraging, and...
Well, it is, and it's more encouraging that you were willing to get out and do it.
When I volunteered last year, I called the city clerk thinking, you know, that I wasn't going to be paid or anything, and I was off of work because I still had a job then, and it turns out, you know, they pay you $9 an hour for a 13-hour. It's $150.
Right, and I know you're still, you know, out there on the job market and stuff. Are you having any luck at all?
No, not. It's getting a little scary, but that's not why I called. I didn't want to, you know, throw my dirty laundry out there. I really just want to encourage people. It's another way to get involved, and it's a good way to see how the system works and to see the people that come out and vote. And it's kind of funny because you can, like, I could pick out about, I would say,